the reality as you try to, or get your children these, jabs. We'll look at that in more detail. In other news...
Sir Keir Starmer has opened the door to watering down some of his migration plans after an astonishing intervention from Angela Rayner. I'm LBC's Natasha Clark with the details.
Staying with political stories, an exchange between Conservative leader Kemi Badenoch and Sir Keir Starmer over the Mandelson affair.
So I will ask him again. Did he speak to Peter Mandelson about this before the appointment, yes or no?
Yes. Prime Minister.
Mr Speaker, I've already made clear that he was asked questions and gave untruthful replies.
And a wriggling PM dodged the question not once, not twice, but six times. Plus, never mind the King's speech, what about the Queen's tattoo? Camilla, a tattoo of sorts, but where? Those stories and more after the 7 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, President Trump says the US will massively blow up a major Iranian gas field if Tehran attacks Qatar's energy facilities again. He says an earlier strike on Iran's South Par gas field was carried out by Israel and he knew nothing about it. But Donald Trump has warned that America won't hesitate to target it should Iran target its Gulf neighbour again. Middle East expert Professor Joanne Held Cummings has told LBC... Tensions remain high.
What we have is a difficult problem because Trump is saying that if Iran strikes Qatar, then the U.S. will strike Iran. But Iran, of course, is saying we are only responding against Qatar because Israel and the U.S. had struck our oil facilities in the first place.
The strikes on energy infrastructure in the Gulf spiked the price of Brent crude oil overnight. At one point, it reached $112 a barrel. It's currently trading at $108 a barrel. In other news, two men are due in court later after being charged with spying for Iran. They're accused of the suspected surveillance of people and locations linked to the Jewish community in London last summer. Two others have been released without charge. The Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, is to visit a meningitis vaccination centre in Kent later after an outbreak in the county. 20 cases of the infection are being investigated. Two people have died. More than 600 students in the Canterbury area have received vaccines against meningitis B. Sir Keir Starmer is understood to be looking at how to water down some migration changes after a backlash from Labour MPs. Sources have told LBC that ministers are looking at tweaks to proposals on toughening the criteria for migrants to gain permanent residency. The plans have been criticised in recent days by the former Deputy PM Angela Rayner as un-British. LBC's political editor Natasha Clark has the exclusive details.
I'm told that Sir Keir Starmer, the Home Office, the Whip's Office are all in agreement that they do need to look carefully at the consultation, which I'm told has had more than 200,000 responses since it closed a few weeks ago. And they are looking at possible tweaks to this system. Now, the government insists they're not about to junk that policy. They will still be pressing ahead.
And ministers have announced plans to protect Britain's steel industry. It includes a new target to ensure half of the steel used in the UK is made domestically. The current target is 30%. In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen later at 10,305. It closed down 98 yesterday. The pound buys $1.32 and €1.15. LBC weather, sunny spells for much of the UK after any early fog clears. Cloudy for the northeast of England and large parts of Scotland. A high of 18 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Get the unrivaled Samsung Galaxy S26 Ultra with its incredible privacy display, so your screen is only viewable to you when you're out and about. Right now, you can save £20 a month on the UK's best network. Plus, enjoy a pair of Galaxy Buds 3 Pro for just £1. Get yours today on EE. Launch offer ends 30th of March.
Saving on minimum 24-month 125GB Essentials Airtime Plan. Eligibility, credit check and terms apply. Credit by EE Limited. Verify best network at ee.co.uk/claims.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Morning, 4 minutes after seven on Thursday, the 19th of March. The meningitis vaccines, as the government says, don't panic. There are plenty of supplies, and the pharmacists say, if so, where are they? Who do you believe and what is the reality as you see it? If you're trying to get vaccinations for yourself or possibly for your children, particularly if they're of university age. Plus, what are the suggestions now? A 24-hour delay before the public meningitis alert. Yesterday, it appeared the government was absolutely on spot with this. But now, is that the reality? In other news, and reflecting the story you heard in the LBC News Bulletin, claim, counterclaim in the conflict in the Middle East, but what is the reality here in the UK as regards oil?
Oil and gas prices surge as energy infrastructure comes under attack in a nightmare scenario in the Middle East. I'm Christian May from City AM discussing this with Nick shortly.
On the eve of Eid, an unholy row over prayers. Sir Keir Starmer calling out comments from Shadow Justice Secretary Nick Timothy. He was at PMQ's yesterday.
He said last night that Muslims praying in public are not welcome. He described it as an act of domination. If we're in my team, it'd be gone.
Another U-turn on the way as regards migrants and the supposed crackdown. We'll look at that in more detail. Plus, to Birmingham, it really is a load of rubbish. No, not the city. No need to complain just yet, but rather still no resolution for that bin strike. Sharon Graham, General Secretary of the Unite Union, spoke with me in May last year. That's right, May, about her frustration. She'll join us later in the show. But she said last year...
Why are these workers being asked to pay for the mistakes of the council? It's totally and utterly inappropriate. They need to get round the table. The leader of the council needs to, spine up, quite frankly, and get round the table and let's get this deal done.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Two major lines emerging regarding the meningitis story. This is, of course, as again you've heard on the LBC News Bulletin, the cases stay at 20, which is the good news. The bad news is they spread to a second university. The relatively good news is that it's still in Kent. I'm not wishing anybody, but if you're thinking, oh dear God, how far up the country, how far of Kent, out of Kent has it got, it would appear not, or at least not yet. But the crisis extends, and one way you can help us is the claim from Wes Streeting, the Health Secretary, that vaccine supplies are fine, which is immediately knocked back by the Independent Pharmacies Association, Chief Executive Leila Hanbeck, who tells the I newspaper, Wes Streeting is saying there's plenty of stock. Well, where is it? A lot of Mal members are contacting suppliers when they're on the ordering system and it's saying stock unobtainable. And that is very much what we picked up from calls from you yesterday. So if you're trying to get yourself, or possibly more likely your children, particularly if they are of, or child, if he, she, they are of university age, what is the reality when you try and book jabs? From personal experience, I can speak with someone in my family that when she tried to get them for her children, I'm afraid there were no supplies at all in that part of southwest London. But let's hear what it is around the rest of the country. So that's one line. The other is it would appear, or at least the Daily Telegraph is reporting, it took an NHS trust 24 hours to notify health officials that a patient with suspected meningitis had died. And by the time they did notify, the outbreak had killed a second patient at the same trust. Well, that's really one for me to try and drill through with the government, whoever they put up later today. But as regards supplies, that comes to you. Now, if you're listening, as I said on yesterday's show, cases rose to 20. We also learnt yesterday afternoon it was the second university, it's Canterbury Christchurch, confirming one of its students has been affected. Professor Susan Hopkins is the CEO of the UK Health Security Agency, the body now possibly under scrutiny for a possible, I stress, time delay. But they are charged with keeping the public safe from infectious diseases. And she said of the spread of the virus...
I have never in my career seen this number of cases in this finite period of time seen such an explosive start to a meningitis outbreak.
Most experts agree on one thing, the number of cases will rise. It can be up to 2 weeks before those infected experience symptoms. Officials yesterday launched a vaccine scheme offering jabs and antibiotics to the 5,000 University of Kent students living on the Canterbury campus. Rebecca Chapman is one of those who had the jab and she told Sky News...
We've got all the information as quickly as they've been possible and they've been quite clear with what's happening. I feel a lot more protected, I'm less scared, and I did get the antibiotic as well, so I feel a lot more protected from the risk.
Now, without wishing and not wanting to add to any degree of panic, what is the reality about vaccines? Again, I'm not trying to scare monger in any way, but there has been a proven surge in demand for private men B jabs across the UK, typically coming in at 200 or... a shade over £200. Boots implementing an online queuing system. Speaking with ITV yesterday, Wes Streeting said it's not government advice to get vaccinated privately and said there are plenty of supplies.
So we're not advising people to get the vaccine privately. We are, as I said, asking JCVI to consider whether we should make it more widely available through the NHS. It's not surprising me, frankly, that in recent days we have seen people approaching pharmacies to buy it privately. There is actually plenty of stock of vaccine supply in the country.
Well, let's just hold on that. There's actually plenty of supply stock in the country. But here's Leila Hanbeck, who I referenced earlier, Chief Executive of the Independent Pharmacists Association, telling us...
It seems that no one is communicating what has happened. And so, again, pharmacists are also operating in the dark, not being able to highlight exactly when and where it's going to be available.
Former Health Secretary Stephen Doyle can give us both the political and the health aspect of this. But first, let's turn to Oliver Pickard, who's chair of the National Pharmacy Association. Thank you for coming on. Where is the reality in this as you see it? The government is saying there are plenty of supplies. Leila Hanbeck saying, well, my colleagues don't seem to have them. Which is it? Good morning to you.
There is currently no supply in the wholesalers. And when we contacted the manufacturer yesterday, myself, sent them an email asking where the stock is, they said there is no stock available for general distribution and there is no date of resupply either.
Pardon my utter ignorance, Mr. Pickard. Are you aware, is this a difficult vaccine to manufacture? Would stores be available, supplies be available elsewhere in Europe or the United States or somewhere?
Yeah, it is not a difficult vaccine to manufacture, no different to any other. I'm not a vaccine specialist, but it's not a vaccine that we've ever had problem getting. It's something that we do in our pharmacies. I run pharmacies, and my pharmacist always vaccinates students just before they go off to university, generally at the end of year 13, beginning of university. This is when most students would get the vaccine. It's never been a supply issue. I suspect there is currently stock being prioritised for those mostly affected in Kent. It's a tragic story. I understand why that is. But at the same time, I also understand why many parents are worried and want to have their children vaccinated because, you know, the memory of COVID perhaps is leading us to trying to protect ourselves as soon as possible. I have personally spoken or spent the last 2 days just speaking to patients, reassuring them, telling them that we are trying our very hardest to get the vaccine. Parents are worried, students are worried, and rightly so.
Lastly, Mr. Pickard, there's no real measure for this, but can you give me an idea of the level of demand that your colleagues are experiencing?
So everyone is getting an increase in demand from everywhere in the UK, from the north of Scotland to Kent, obviously. To give you an idea, in my pharmacies, we had over... So I have four pharmacies, and we have over 1,200 people booking yesterday or being added to a waiting list. That is, I'm located in Berkshire, quite some distance away from Kent, and yet the demand is incredible. I've not seen this level of demand for a vaccine since the beginning of COVID vaccination.
Olivier Pickard, thank you for your time. You chair the National Pharmacy Association, 12 after 7. Listening to that, I referenced earlier Stephen Dorrell. Now, Stephen Dorrell served as a health secretary with the Conservative Party, former chair of the Health Select Committee, and chaired the NHS Confederation. He's now a Liberal Democrat. And let's start with the political hat. I would imagine no one envies being health secretary at a time like this. How would you characterise how Wes Streeting has dealt with it to date? Morning to you.
Morning, Nick. I actually think, Nick, that Wes Streeting has played this right. I don't agree with Wes on a number of things. But I think the key thing when you have addressed this kind of issue as health secretary is to insist that you have to focus on the evidence and what Wes Streeting was saying yesterday about a vaccination program is that there is a vaccination program, of course, for newborns and for young children against meningitis B. The advice from JCVI, he referred to it in the clip you played, that's an advisory committee on vaccines and immunizations. It's existed for many years. The advice from them was that it should be introduced from newborns when this vaccine became available 10 years ago or so, but that it shouldn't be generally available. Now, he's asked the JCVI to re-examine that opinion, which I think is the right thing to do. But I think that the policy response should be guided by evidence and expert advice, not by, as he described it, the temptation for a politician to offer knee-jerk response.
Mr. Doyle, have we got concerns over the UK HSA, Health Security Agency? Let me read you the timeline as the newspaper The Telegraph understands it. March the 12th, French Health Ministry becomes aware exchange student studying in Kent has meningitis. March 13th, the security agency alerted to a patient in hospital with meningitis. March the 14th, French officials notify the agency about the sick exchange student, Juliet. March the 15th, an outbreak becomes public knowledge. They send an Instagram message to the club chemistry, where these would appear these youngsters call it. That does not speak to me of moving as rapidly as they should.
I think that's a fair set of questions, and it's certainly for the HSA, of course, to answer that. I think and until I came on your programme this morning, my perception was that the HSA had acted reasonably quickly to identify the club, to identify the source of the infection, and to offer an immunisation programme to the students most directly affected. But clearly, any public authority needs to be subject to scrutiny about whether it did act as quickly as it should have done and how we can ensure that it acts as quickly as possible in future.
Stephen, always grateful for your help in Health Matters. Thank you. Stephen Doyle, you were Conservative Health Secretary. You chaired the Health Select Committee and chaired the NHS Confederation, and you're now a Liberal Democrat. Helen Whateley, a Conservative MP, current Conservative MP, is saying she wants to, quote, HSA, Health Security Agency, to explain the timeline. We will try and get more on that from the government minister. In other news, another U-turn on the way, this time regarding migrants and migrants' rights. Speaking with LBC last month, Home Secretary Shabana Mahmood said she was pressing on with her plans.
We're progressing full steam ahead with our reforms, and I'm already making those changes on moving to a temporary model of refugee status in our country.
7:15 LBC News headlines, Dominic Ellis.
President Trump says the US will, in his words, massively blow up a major Iranian gas field if Tehran attacks Qatar's energy facilities again. The Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, is to visit a meningitis vaccination centre in Kent later after an outbreak in the county. And new data shows the rate of UK unemployment remained unchanged at 5.2% in the 3 months to January. LBC weather, sunny spells for much of the UK, cloudy for the northeast of England and large parts of Scotland, a high of 18 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Dave Goff. The M3 northbound is closed because of an accident where there's been a fuel spillage between Junction 3 for Lightwater and Junction 2 for the M25, so there are queues. There were queues on the A3 northbound. The exit slip road to the Wisley interchange for the M25 is partly blocked. A lorry has broken down. In King's Cross, York Way is closed in both directions because of an investigation between Goods Way and Copenhagen Street, so there are queues. In Hornchurch, it's slow on the High Street. Eastbound, it's partly blocked. A bus has broken down at North Street. In Erith, Fraser Road eastbound is closed at Bexley Road. That's after there was a fire in a building. And on the trains, East Midlands Railway have delays of up to 10 minutes and also some cancellations between St Pancras and Bedford. That's after there were some problems with the signals at St Pancras earlier.
This is LBC.
Pain in my hip. I keep feeling dizzy. I'm getting migraines more often.
There's another way to contact your GP practice, by simply sending your symptoms and requests through their website or the NHS app. We're delivering an NHS fit for the future. Tap it, type it, and we'll take care of it.
Julia, how do you spell vertebrae?
Oh, just type pain in the neck.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. This is LBC.
A southern train is a place where you can wind down and catch up. A chance to let conversations flow and plans unfold. And swap doomscrolling for telling stories. Too good for the group chat. Make the journey part of the joy and save one third with off-peak group tickets at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
Turn up your taste buds with Dolmio Intensify pasta sauces. From mild creamy garlic and black pepper, to bold smoky garlic and sun-dried tomato,
whoa,
and spicy smoked paprika and chili.
Woo-hoo!
Try Dolmio Intensify, pasta sauces with serious flavor. Dolmio, yeah!
High-pressure sales tactics, huge site fee increases, and a loss of value have left many holiday park homeowners feeling misled, angry, and trapped. The Holiday Park Advice Centre can help claim back any money you're owed. Text ADVICE to 78900.
Hello, Holiday Park Advice Centre.
That's ADVICE to 78900.
So, what's on your to-do list today? Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income, and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax, and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 99 1234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
19 minutes after 7. John, you'll be the first caller on that. The reality as regards vaccines. It is, of course, on the front page of some of your newspapers. The iNewspaper has this story on its front page. Meningitis cases spread. I have to say the major story, though, and we will be covering this later, is the latest events in Iran. For the Daily Mail, Iran wages full-scale economic war on the West, and for the Guardian, a dangerous escalation. Israel strikes world's largest gas field. And the front page of the Daily Telegraph is a story, and indeed the Daily Express, actually, is a story we're going to give you in a few minutes' time, which is a possible weaker migrant plan, as the Daily Express calls it. It's the front page of the Telegraph, as I said. To the LBC app, and they are talking of British military helping US plan a Strait of Hormuz reopening, so possibly changing there. And Sun Online is telling us that Gary Glitter, of course, the convicted paedophile who's aged 81, the reports are that he's on his last legs. He's now deaf, and he spends days holed up in a cell. Prison officers thinking he'll die behind bars. Well, that will be certainly a toll of vile criminals, won't it? So soon after Ian Huntley. Right, let's get to the reality as you see it and as you find it on the streets as regards the provision of these vaccines. John is in Richmond, the one that boasts a former Prime Minister as their constituency MP, not the one in South West London. Morning, John.
Morning, Nick. How are you?
I'm good. Who are you trying to get the meningitis for? You, one of your children, your grandchildren? What is it, mate?
My son, he's 14. I was listening to your show yesterday.
Yes,
sir. And I went online with Boots Pharmacy, booked and paid.
Yep.
And then I got nothing back. I've heard nothing since. I don't know whether we've gotten a point or not, but they took the money, the £110.
Did they now?
From the account, and we've heard nothing since.
Are you able to talk to a human being, or is it all online, John?
It's all online at the moment, yeah.
How frustrating. What do you intend to do?
I think I'm going to have to just go into the local store and see what happens.
I was going to suggest that if you're nearby or you've got access to a car, you can get into town and ask what's happening. I mean, we have to say, fortunately, it's limited. It does seem contained down in Kent. The two universities are in Kent. You're quite a way away, but obviously you're a dad. You've got concerns, John.
Yeah, you don't know where it's going to end up, so it's just better to be prepared, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right there. Lastly, I did mention the fact Mr. Sunak is your constituency MP. Do you see much of him?
No, not at all. Not even on TV. Yeah, I don't know where he is.
Would he win again?
No.
You don't think so. All right. Good luck. I hope you can get it resolved down at Boots, the chemist, later today. Best wishes to your teenage boy. John, thanks for calling us. Let's take one more before we move on. Samantha is in Dunmow, considerably closer to Kent. Samantha, your story. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Hi. I just wanted to get in touch because I had a bit of a situation with my daughter who is in halls in Kent University.
Oh, well, the one in Canterbury, not Christchurch, the main one, University of Kent.
No, she's at Kent, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
She returned home to me back in Essex on Friday. She wasn't a club chemistry, but because she's in halls and she was quite close to the person who was most affected, she was told that she needed to get the antibiotics. I didn't want to drive her all the way back to Kent to get those, so I contacted my local doctor here in Dunmow, which I was told to do. My doctor asked, yep, great, can you send over all the information that's relevant, which I did, which I'd received from Kent. And my doctor said, I don't believe that's sufficient, I will not be prescribing the antibiotics. So then I had to contact my pharmacist, who was absolutely wonderful, who then told me to contact 111. 111 also wouldn't help me. My pharmacist then had to take on this case personally and contact my doctor and say, look, if God forbid anything should happen to this girl, this is down to you. Mm. You need to prescribe those antibiotics. And that's when they did. But it was so hard to get those antibiotics if you were away from the Kent area.
And the justification from the doctor, and well done to you for your persistence, and well done for the pharmacist, who sounds absolute rock star, well done to him or her. Well done to him then, sorry. And the doctor said, we don't think it's close enough contact. What did the doctor say?
They said that the information that I'd sent them over from Kent University wasn't sufficient enough for them to believe that the antibiotics should be prescribed.
And just remind me, you say she has been in contact with one of the people who's now got meningitis.
The person who had the meningitis was in the building next to her. And because they were all in halls, it was a close proximity, as far as they were concerned.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, you've got there. Again, there is no scale of this, but how concerned are you for your daughter now? At least you've got the antibiotics in, Samantha.
We've got the antibiotics. She's been recalled today, so I'm driving her up to Canterbury. She's going to have the vaccine today.
Oh, okay.
I believe the first part of the vaccine. I think maybe there's two. But there's not a lot of information coming through, to be honest. It is worrying. You know, she's my daughter. I want to protect her. So I'm just waiting to hear, really, as to what's the best thing to do.
Isn't that interesting? So the university think it's sufficient for you to take your daughter back so they can give her the vaccine. Your doctor felt it wasn't sufficient to prescribe antibiotics.
Absolutely.
Well, that tells us everything we need to know, doesn't it?
Absolutely, it does. Yeah.
Do you want to mention, not your doctor, do you want to mention the pharmacist who clearly went the extra mile to help you? Do you want to mention?
I absolutely would. His name was Will, and he worked at Yogi's Pharmacy in Takeley. He was amazing. He went above and beyond, and that is rare these days, so thank you very much.
I think the one was a shout-out, I think, is what one says at times. Shout-out, I think one says. Shout-out to Will at that pharmacy. You'll be very relieved to get your daughter over the Dartford Crossing, won't you, and down to Kent. Bit of a drive, but worth every single mile. Samantha, look after. Thanks for that. Come back to the story in a moment. 7:25 now, front page news. Sir Keir Starmer looking how to water down one of the governments. This time migration changes with another U-turn. This follows a backlash from Labour MPs. Now, former Deputy Prime Minister Angela Rayner made a major intervention earlier this week saying the proposals were un-British. Here with all the details, LBC's political editor, Natasha Clark. Another U-turn on the way. Natasha, good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, potentially. I'd probably not describe it as a full U-turn yet, but let's wait and see.
Now, so just veering off to one of the sides.
Just a slight, you know, turning. We'll see. It's all part of a bid to stop a huge number of people getting the right to stay here forever all at the same time. This is the government's migration plans. You heard from Shabana Mahmood when I was with her in Denmark a few weeks ago. You heard from her at the end of last year when she first revealed these plans. What they are worried about is what some people call the Boris wave of arrivals. They all came here legally when the Tories loosened the immigration rules under the last government, but some people fear that this is going to give them access to essentially indefinitely to remain, welfare and benefits, which the government fears could cost them around £10 billion all at once. And so yesterday we noticed a huge shift in what the government were saying, and I was hearing from Labour MPs that a shift was on the cards. Downing Street then could not commit to the plans being rolled out in full as outlined by Shabana Mahmood at the end of last year. And I can reveal to you today, Nick, they are looking to soften some of those measures. There has been a backlash from Labour MPs. We've heard up to 40 of them are unhappy. And last night, speaking to LBC's Ian Dale, the Leeds MP, Alex Sobel, says Angela Rayner was right when she said those proposals are un-British.
The real concern amongst Labour MPs is a plan that's out to consultation, so it's not one that's being planned to come to Parliament now. That indefinite leave to remain would become much more difficult, take many more years. There would be a continual process for people. And this would be applied retrospectively as well. And this is for people who've arrived here legally, not people on the boats, through every method, including at the moment, potentially, and Ukrainians asking about this, Ukrainians and Hong Kongers. And I think that is fundamentally un-British. And I think Angela Rayner is absolutely right. And I hope the government relooks at this.
But when I spoke to the Home Secretary last month, she said they were pushing full steam ahead with their changes, but she did not rule out making some tweaks.
We're progressing full steam ahead with our reforms, and I'm already making those changes on moving to a temporary model of refugee status in our country. What I would say to colleagues across Parliament, but of course particularly in my own party, I do accept that some people are not comfortable with all of these reforms or don't agree. Disagreement in politics is a normal thing. The majority of my colleagues are also in agreement. This is a big problem for us. We've got a broken asylum system, and we have a legal migration system that's been open to unacceptable levels of abuse.
Now, Nick, I'm told that there could be carve-outs for people working in specific sectors. So if you're working in the public sector, if you're an NHS worker, perhaps. But what they're most worried about is people who are approaching the five-year mark. So
yes,
they've come
the sticking
their way.
Point seems to be the Home Secretary, Shabana Mahmood, and you were with her, of course, you went on that trip. She wants it to go to 10 rather than 5. But this is what's one of the main features causing the concern. Is that right, Natasha?
That's exactly right. And so it's the people that are approaching that five-year mark. So they've been told you can apply for indefinite leave to remain. But Angela Rayner has accused the government of, quotes, shifting the goal goalposts by making it up to 10 years. Now, I'm told that they are working on potentially carving out specific sectors, people who have already been working, paying their way, working by the rules for the last 4.5 years, people that are approaching that mark. I'm told that the Number 10, the WIPs and the Home Office are all working together on plans to try to soften these a bit. A government spokesperson said to me last night the government's position has not changed. I think we can add a yet on the end of that, Nick. They said we will always welcome those who come to this country and contribute to national life. The privilege of living here forever should be earned, not automatic. We are currently reviewing the 200,000 responses and will outline our response in due course.
Any idea of a timeline? It's impossible to tell, I suppose, when we might hear a definitive yes or no to this.
Yes, look, it's definitely going to happen. The government have already brought forward all of these changes, but they don't require a specific change to the law. They require a change to what's called the immigration rules. So at the moment, there is no vote planned in Parliament. I imagine, Nick, it will come forward in the next couple of months because they want to put this bit of legislation in the next King's Speech. That's going to be after the May local elections. That is if Keir Starmer makes it through after that. But yes, I think it will be a matter of months. But there are lots of people genuinely really worried about applying the law retrospectively and think that we just shouldn't be doing that in this country.
OBC's political editor Natasha Clark reporting. We'll give you an opportunity to take your calls. We'll take your calls or make your views known on that at 8 o'clock. Just coming up on 7.30, Rika, you will be... I want to hear from you because you were a pharmacist, so I want your views on the meningitis story. And as we've already told you, as Israel strikes the world's largest gas field, what could the repercussions be back here at home?
Oil and gas prices surge as energy infrastructure comes under attack in a nightmare scenario in the Middle East. I'm Christian May from City AM discussing this with Nick shortly.
You are listening to Nick Ferrari at Breakfast. The time on LBC, the time is 7.30. The news is with Dominic Ellis.
President Trump says he knew nothing of Israel's attack on a major gas field in Iran yesterday and has promised it won't happen again. But he has warned the US will massively blow up the entire South Par field if Iran keeps up retaliatory strikes on Qatar. The Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, is to visit a vaccination centre in Kent today after a deadly outbreak of meningitis in the county. 20 cases are being investigated. 2 people have died. And UK unemployment has remained at its highest rate in 5 years. The Office for National Statistics says the jobless rate was 5.2% in the 3 months to January. LBC weather, sunny spells for much of the UK, some cloud for the northeast of England and large parts of Scotland, a high of 18 degrees.
On the latest episode of The News Agents.
Why is Tommy Robinson cheering on Nick Timothy, the Shadow Justice Secretary? And will Kemi Badenoch slap him down or join him?
Get the latest episode of The News Agents with Emily Maitlis, John Sopel and Lewis Goodall. Listen or watch on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
A spectacle far beyond your imagination. Be amazed. Be moved. Be there. For an experience that will stay with you forever. Disney's The Lion King at London's Lyceum Theatre. Book now at thelionking.co.uk.
A message from TfL.
I saw him in the local news a few days after. His name was Rakesh. They had to put him into a coma just because I didn't look again at that turning. He had 2 kids. How did I not see his bike ahead of me? Well, I didn't look again. He didn't make it.
Drivers, take another look, not a life. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
Interactive Investor would like to say welcome and thank you. Welcome to all our new investors who joined us over the past few months. And thank you to a certain competitor that decided to change their fee structure and sent them all our way. Visit Interactive Investor to see what you could save with our low flat fee. Interactive Investor. I think, therefore I. Remember, when investing, your capital is at risk.
Nick Ferrari at Breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
7.33 is the time, as I said earlier. Rika will talk to you about the meningitis and the supply of vaccine. You were a pharmacist. I want to hear your view, but let's get into the world of business. Obviously affected, of course, by Israel's strike on the world's largest gas field. What has the impact been? Christian May, Editor-in-Chief at City AM, will spell out that reaction now. Christian, what we got? Morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yeah, what's happening overnight, what continued to happen in the early hours of this morning, is being described as a turning point for markets, a turning point for perhaps the global economy. After that Israeli strike on Iranian energy infrastructure, the Iranian regime said, that's it, the gloves are off. They said very clearly that energy infrastructure in oil and gas sectors in the region now constitute legitimate targets. And they followed through with that. They struck last night Qatar's largest liquid natural gas facility. These sites have been evacuated. They launched fresh missiles into Saudi Arabia, which I think were intercepted. And there was a further strike in Qatar again this morning. And the consequences of this, Nick, is that oil is now touching again $110 a barrel. The gas price, of course, increasing. Analysts said that this is a turning point, that this is no longer just about the debate around the Strait of Hormuz and the transportation of oil and gas, but about the plumbing of the global energy system itself. The consequences of this are already being felt in markets around the world. It's a bit of a sea of red as I look out over the markets dashboard this morning. Not expecting much of an uptick, not expecting much green on the dashboard throughout the course of today. It is alarming, to say the least. We are getting into the touching point now where the real consequences, if you like, for the consumer economy in particular can be felt. There's now even conversations about whether long-haul flights will be cancelled, pressures on fuel supply. It's a very, very shaky start to a Thursday morning.
And it's D-Day for the Bank of England. What do you imagine is going to happen later today with interest rates?
Well, we saw late last night that in the US, the Fed held their interest rates, and they did sound the alarm about inflation in the US. But here in London, the Bank of England will announce their decision at midday. And most people fully expect them to hold their interest rates. Remember, we had been on a downward trajectory, but they are now staring down the barrel of these inflationary shocks driven by the war in Iran and the associated impact on energy prices. They do have a really difficult choice to make, not so much today in their immediate decision, but over the next few months, what is their priority? They have to contend now with the state of the UK labour market. We've just had in the last few minutes the latest from the Office for National Statistics on that, showing unemployment remains stubbornly high and youth unemployment is particularly bad. Wage growth is cooling. There are questions. If you weren't dealing with a war in Iran, the Bank of England would be looking to stimulate activity by cutting interest rates. They now have to contend with the inflationary pressures. So they've got domestic and international concerns. It is a headache for them. There's no doubt about it. That's a headache for the government. And I dare say a headache for many of us as well. Bank of England decision at midday today.
Good to see a Briton taking over the British Broadcasting Corporation, or the BBC, but not any Briton. I speak of...
You speak of the most likely incoming Director General of the BBC, Matt Britton. Now, he is a former top Google boss. He led Google in Europe, Middle East and Africa for a decade. He has said that getting into TV is something he's always wanted to do.
Yeah, well, why not nice start as the boss of the BBC? That makes perfect sense.
Yeah. No, it's nice when dreams come true, isn't it? I first met him, I think, you know, about 15 years ago, 10 years ago or thereabouts. There's no doubt he's an impressive guy. He currently sits, by the way, on the board of The Guardian, which I'm sure will, you know, send some commentators frothing at the mouth a bit. But he's a very sharp guy, and he certainly understands digital, digital distribution in particular. It's an interesting proposition. There was always talk that the Director General role might be split between somebody who runs the BBC and somebody else who is its editor-in-chief, because the Director General is the editor-in-chief. Yeah. Now, as somebody who was never an editor before I became an editor, I have some sympathy with with Matt Britton's new position. But it is interesting that he is clearly being chosen more as a sort of somebody who can get to grips with the way in which content creation and distribution is changing, more so than for his ability to perhaps run the news at 10.
Lastly, has your wife kicked you out? I noticed that you're speaking to us from your office today, and did you get there by Lime Bike?
Well, I can tell you I didn't sleep here last night, but the bottom line is with oil prices at $110 a barrel, I can't very well be sitting at home on my own sofa, Nick. So I am in the office. I'm here in the city. It's a very beautiful morning. And I can see some line bikes scattered around the streets here, as I always do. But perhaps there'll be fewer of them in the future because they're overhauling their system. People in London in particular will be familiar with the sight of line bikes, these rental bikes, quite often cluttering up the pavement, should we put it like that. And the company, which is often fined by councils, is overhauling its tagging system, its location system, and indeed the size of the bikes. They say it will make it harder for people to just leave them where they want. And I'm sure the councils and the odd commuter on foot will be grateful for that.
Thank you for that. Christian May, Editor in Chief at City AM, already manning his desk as he has to with that oil price soaring. We'll bring you the interest rate reaction, of course, here on LBC. 7:39 is the time. Let's pick up on that call to Rika in Norfolk. Rika on the radio. Now, we've spoken before. You're a pharmacist, aren't you? Good morning.
Hi, good morning, Nick. Yes, it's Rekha, actually. Yes, I was a pharmacist. I retired about 3 years ago.
Right.
So I might be speaking completely out of turn. But before I retired, I was involved with the flu and COVID vaccination services that were set up through community pharmacies. And I think I might have an explanation,
please,
for the disparity that you are hearing about from
West
Streeting saying there's plenty of supply of the NB vaccine and community pharmacies experiencing what Lydia
the reality,
and,
as it were, yes.
Lila said about the vaccine supplies to community pharmacies.
Yes.
Which,
so,
know,
what is the reality as you see it?
I believe that there is two reasons for it. One is that there may well be plenty of vaccines in the country. However, a lot of the vaccines are kept aside for use by the NHS and supplied to general practices, to vaccination centres, NHS vaccinations.
But why wouldn't you seek to release them now? Rika, why wouldn't you seek to release them now? I don't understand.
Yes. No. But those are released down for use in those areas. Community pharmacies are only able to get it from the general supply chain, which is where they're saying there is no supplies. So that is totally two different areas of supply, and the ones that are kept aside for the NHS use will not be available to community pharmacies.
So that doesn't, lastly, briefly, that doesn't make sense. Because people need them, and they need them now.
No, I mean, that doesn't make sense, but that has always been the case. Now, if anything has changed in the 3 years I've been retired, I'm not aware of, but I believe that is where the disparity is between what West Streeting is saying
and
what Leila and Olivia are telling you.
That's Olivia Picard, with whom we spoke, and Leila Hanbeck, who's chief executive and chairman as well. Rika, as a former pharmacist, thank you. Grateful to you. 7:41, I have to move on because we have to go to other stories, and we're off to Birmingham, where unbelievably that dispute over bin workers continues, and General Secretary of the Unite Union, Sharon Graham, I think, will be at a rally later today. The General Secretary, Sharon Graham, joins us now. Can I confirm you will be up there later today, Sharon? Morning to you.
Morning, I'm here now. I'm in Birmingham as you speak.
What is planned for today, Sharon?
Well, look, we're wanting to get the message out really clearly that obviously this government needs to intervene in what's happening in Birmingham. Look, let me just remind your listeners, Nick, and we've spoken before about this, what this dispute is about. It's not a dispute about a pay rise. These are workers who woke up one morning and were told that they'd have to take an £8,000 pay cut. That is a quarter of some of these people's pay. This is life-changing amounts of money being taken off their pay packet. They don't get huge amounts of money in the first place, and they're having to pay the price for an incompetent council. Now, I had a deal on the table in May last year. I went into ACAS after all the dither and delay was going on for months. I asked for the MD to come in, decision maker, we need to scope out a deal, let's get the deal done. In 48 hours, that deal was scoped out. She goes back to the ranch saying she's going to give me that in writing in 48 hours, doesn't return to the negotiating table, and tells us that the commissioners, government-backed commissioners in Birmingham City Council, have blocked the deal. They need to put that deal and honour it on the table so that workers can vote for it. We can't just simply walk away from these workers. Their lives are in jeopardy because of the amounts of money that this council wants to cut from their pay Because of council incompetence. But why should workers pay?
But the council points the finger at you, at your union, not you, at the union, and talks of a £265,000 fine that was levied against your union as a result of slow walking in front of waste lorries near depots. What was the thinking behind that, Sharon Graham?
Well, actually, this is injunctions. They spent £33 million trying to break the strike of residents' money, £33 million. And so they've had injunctions on picket lines, on protests. But look, I'm really relaxed, Nick, about the fine, because Unite won't pay the fine. The fine is coming out of Labour's affiliation. You will see that we've dropped Labour's affiliation by 40%. It more than covers the fine, with over £200,000 left over. And that money will be going to the strike pay. And so, therefore, you know, they can play these silly games as much as they like. It's not going to affect us because, as I say, Labour will pay that fine. But what I want them to do is to stop playing around. There's no consequence for these council, for these offices in the council. There's no consequence. I negotiate with businesses up and down the country and have done for 35 years. It is complete incompetence to come into a room, to table an agreement effectively, come out of the room and then say that actually, sorry, we can't get that deal through. It's complete incompetence. I've never seen it before in 35 years of negotiating. I'm not going to give up on these workers. They're in my union and I intend to represent them all the way through to us getting this deal back on the table.
More broadly, you mentioned the Labour government. Angela Rayner says they're running out of time to make their case and to really drive forward. Your view so far of Sir Keir's stewardship of the government, the Labour government?
Well, look, I think people are scratching their heads, Nick. I think they're literally scratching their heads. I was in Downing Street yesterday and I raised a number of things, Birmingham being one of them, oil and gas workers letting go of one rope before we've got hold of another, stopping drilling in the North Sea when we don't have a plan for how we're going to replace, defence workers. I mean, in the world we are in now, I represent defence workers across Britain and I've spent a huge amount of my time trying to get Labour to buy British defence. You know, we got a breakthrough last week on the Leonardo's helicopter contract. It's taken months to get us into that place. I think genuinely across the board, workers are scratching their heads asking, who is Labour representing? And if they can't answer that question pretty swiftly, I think that there will be decimation at the polls in May.
And a change at the top. When does that need to happen, Sharon?
Well, look, I mean, you know, for me, I'm all about the policies, Nick. You know, I mean, it's not a personality contest. You know, I don't mind a boring leader as long as they do the right thing, quite frankly. And, you know, this issue in Birmingham is an example. It's an example of how could they have this situation under a Labour council. I mean, it's like that I'm dealing with Amazon, the way that this council has effectively ran this dispute. And essentially, you know, I think there's going to be a problem for Labour going forward. Workers need to be backed. That is what Labour do. Labour are supposed to be there for everyday people. That's the job they have in hand. That's why they were voted in. They need to get on with it.
Lastly, talking about jobs, can I get a minute with you? A documentary you might have seen called Dirty Business on Channel 4. It's about the problems in the water industry, of which you'll be aware. A lot of my listeners have got involved. Now, you act for 30,000 people in the energy and utility sector. Many of them work in the water industry. There's anger about the level of effluent in England's rivers, lakes and seas. Have your members ever had any backlash from the public because of that? How concerned are you for the safety of your members who actually have to work in our lakes and rivers? Sharon Graham.
Well, look, I mean, I think what's happened in the water industry has been an absolute disgrace. I mean, we have been bailing out the water industry, British taxpayers, for years and years and years, and they've done absolutely nothing in terms of making all of the our waterways better. The bills are extraordinary. I've been saying to Labour, and I don't think this is a radical idea anymore, Nick, why don't we bring this utility back into public ownership? That's not because of some radical left idea. That is the reality of what needs to happen now. We need to have some ownership over our utilities. We need to stop the blackmail. If you take energy bills in Britain, £500 out of an average bill of 1,400 roughly, is pure profit. Pure and utter profit. We've got to start thinking more about bringing our utilities back into public ownership so there's more control, there's more accountability, and we don't have these situations that you're talking about in water.
In a sense, is the water industry representative of the government at this time, promising change, but really no change or tinkering around the edges?
Indeed. I mean, but basically, the water industry has promised and promised and promised, over-promised, under-delivered. That is probably how I would describe Labour at the moment.
Lastly, let's just finish on that point. You said you announced a cut to funding for the Labour Party. Would you reconsider this decision if, say, Andy Burnham, Angela Rayner, became party leader and Prime Minister?
Well, look, what I would say about that is, you know, I'm a bit of a ticks in boxes woman. What I want to see is policies. I want to know what they're going to do. You know, this is not a personality contest. We like one better than the other. I'm sick and tired of listening to promises. I want to know what is Labour going to do for workers in Britain, for communities in Britain. People are on their knees. They are on their knees with the cost of living crisis. They can't take much more.
Good luck with the rally later today. Always enjoy speaking with you. Thank you. Sharon Graham, General Secretary of the Unite Union. By the way, we always give you an update. Roughly the number of tonnes of waste now and litter on the streets of Birmingham and the surrounding area comes in at 80,000 tonnes. Now, what's that equivalent to? The weight of two medieval castles. Yes, and my thanks to Amelia on the team for coming up with that wacky idea. Coming up after the news, or later in the show, the exchange between Kemi Badenoch and Sir Keir Starmer over Prime Minister's questions and the Peter Mandelson affair.
So I will ask him again. Did he speak to Peter Mandelson about this before the appointment, yes or no?
Yes. Prime Minister.
Mr Speaker, I've already made clear that he was asked questions and gave untruthful replies.
Maybe questions, but certainly no answers. That's later in the show. The 7:45 LBC News headlines now. Dominic Ellis.
President Trump says the US will, in his words, massively blow up a major Iranian gas field if it continues to attack Qatar. The University of Kent says 600 students have so far been vaccinated against meningitis following an outbreak in the county, and plans to protect Britain's steel industry have been announced by the government. LBC weather, sunny spells for much of the UK, cloudy for the northeast of England and large parts of Scotland, a high of 18 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Dave Goff. The M3 northbound is closed because of an accident where there's been a fuel spillage between Junction 3 for Lightwater and Junction 2 for the M25, so there are queues. There are also queues on the A3 northbound. The exit slip road at the Wisley interchange for the M25 is partly blocked because a lorry has broken down. It's slowing King's Cross on York Way in both directions after an investigation earlier between Goods Way and Copenhagen Street, so all the lanes are open there. In Hornchurch, it's slow on the High Street. Eastbound, it's partly blocked. A bus has broken down at North Street. In Erith, Fraser Road eastbound is closed at Bexley Road. That's after there was a fire in a building earlier. And on the trains, East Midlands Railway are running a reduced service between St Pancras and Bedford. That's after there were some problems with the signals earlier.
LBC.
Get 25% off coffee and pastries at Cafe Nero with Compare the Market. Take it away, Sergei.
I need a Nero. I'm holding up for a Nero to get a flat white. It's gotta be strong, and it's gotta taste good, and it's gonna be made just right. I need a Nero.
Only with the Compare the Market app, the simplest way to save.
When you take out a qualifying product, one membership a year, 25% off barista-made drinks and pastries, app only, two codes per day, exclusions and T's and C's apply.
Call Nick Ferrari now, 0345-6060-973, LBC.
Hi, I'm looking for a pair of jeans.
Right. Low, slung, slouchy, wide leg, bower leg, curved leg, flared, straight or skinny?
Blue?
Fashion. It's hard to keep on top of. Other things, like the upcoming changes to renting, are a bit easier. As a landlord, you will need to get on top of these important changes. They will affect how you manage your tenancies. Act now. Read the guidance at gov.uk/renting-is-changing.
Hi, I'm Claire, and last year I did my first big hike for Cancer Research UK. It was amazing. The scenery was stunning, the volunteers cheered us through it, and the free hot meal at the end was really what I needed. I did the full marathon hike. There's also a half marathon and a 10K if you don't fancy the big one.
Join thousands of hikers like Claire and escape to nature as you help to fund life-saving research. Search Big Hike today for 30% off your entry. Together, we are beating cancer. T's and C's apply.
At ulizprosperity.com, you buy the car and we pay you up to £600 per month in rental income. For conditions, visit ulizprosperity.com.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. Holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
A Thameslink train is a place where you can wind down and catch up.
A chance to let conversations flow and plans unfold. And swap doomscrolling for telling stories. Too good for the group chat. Make the journey part of the joy and save one third with off-peak group tickets at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
7:53, 7 minutes before eight, we'll return to your views on meningitis, the problems it would seem with getting vaccines in some areas, and was the UK HSA, UK Health Security Agency, was it a little slow off the mark? More on that in a moment. But let's return to some of the front pages that we looked at around about half an hour or so ago. The front page of The Guardian, a dangerous escalation, Israel strikes world's largest gas field. And for the Daily Mail, Iran wages full-scale economic war on the West, threatening to cripple the global energy market. Patrick Winter, diplomatic editor for The Guardian, joins you now. Patrick, these two front pages are of huge significance. Which do you think is the more significant? Morning, Patrick.
Morning. Well, I think the attack on the gas fields we often say in diplomacy we need to step back from the brink. Well, I think we've gone over the brink and we're now in free fall because the retaliation by the Iranians on the Qatari gas field is like attacking the crown jewels of the Qatar's wealth, and it's also the crown jewels in terms of liquid gas and supply of. And we're now seeing Brent up to 113 a barrel, and which is going to go much higher. And there's also reports of an attack on an Iranian nuclear plant. So it really cannot get much more serious than it is at present. There is no obvious means of bringing this to some stage of de-escalation. I really can't emphasize enough how serious this situation is now.
So what do you see as the next shoe to drop, the next main event, Patrick?
Well, I think there's going to be a argument developing between the Israelis and the Americans about whether the attack on the Iranian gas field by Israel was signaled and endorsed by the White House, because there are reports coming out now that Trump's denial that he knew anything about this attack is untrue, and that he changed his position after he was confronted by Qatar, and who asked him, did you know about this? And he said he didn't. And I'm afraid to say, I'm far bit for me to accuse the President of the United States occasionally being economical with the truth. He doesn't have a track record of telling the truth. So there's going to be consequences in terms of relations between Israel and America, and consequences between the Gulf states and America. So there are big diplomatic consequences as well as these huge economic consequences.
You rightly cite the soaring price of a barrel of oil. Is that going to possibly help make the penny or the cent drop back at home for Donald Trump? Because they're paying, I think, north of $4 a gallon of gas there. He's got to be aware of that, Patrick.
Of course he is, there's a big division within the Trump administration about whether this was the right thing to have done and whether the consequences have been thought through. And some of the obvious consequences, such as the closure of the Straits of Hormuz, were there for him to see, but he decided to override that. So there's that consequence. I think also there will be inflation in America, and inflation is just the one thing that Donald Trump can't afford with the midterm elections coming up. So I think everyone's trying to find a way of pulling him back, but he's very, very angry with the Europeans as well for them not coming to his help. There's been reports he's never been angrier, and he can get angry. So he's in a very he's in a corner at the moment, and that's not a good place for him to be.
Lastly, we've mentioned the US, Israel, Iran, other Gulf countries. What should the role of the United Kingdom be here, Patrick?
I think it's to try to persuade both Iran and the US that there is a de-escalatory path. I wouldn't recommend all your listeners reading it, but there's a tremendously good piece by the Omani foreign minister in The Economist trying to set out the ideas, and he was the mediator in the talks. He's still trying to argue there is a way in which, if Iran and the Gulf states can talk to each other about how they view their future relations, including over climate change and future energy structures, you can get to an agreement. But everyone is now in such a state that it's going to be so hard to get people back around the table.
Always enjoy speaking with you. Thanks for your take on that, Patrick Winter, diplomatic editor for The Guardian. Considerable coverage, by the way, in The Guardian newspaper on many aspects of this story. Let's come back at just coming up on 2 minutes before 8. the domestic story concerning meningitis. Bernie says, I can understand parents wanting to vaccinate themselves and especially their kids, no matter what age, but it seems once again this is panic buying. Unlike COVID, meningitis is not airborne. You get it by saliva, either by kissing, sharing drinks, cutlery or vapes. I'm a mother of two adult children, meningitis survivor, which I got not long after I was born, and I actually died twice in my father's arms. Please let the vaccines we do have to be given to the students first. Kath, in a similar theme, knee-jerk reactions cause more problems than the original problem. Look at all these reactions we had through COVID, and now we'll be paying the price for decades to come. I think a lot of the concern, I think you're absolutely right, Kath, and it's absolutely understandable and justifiable that parents will be concerned. It's so recent, of course, since we came through that COVID pandemic, you can understand why people are reacting in the way that they are. Eleanor says, I rang our GP and Boots and three other private providers. No available Men-B vaccines. We're in Greenwich Borough, New Eltham. I have twin 16-year-old girls. We want to know when we can get vaccinated. Well, again, I would say, although you're in London, you're quite a long way from the epicentre, as it was. Both of those universities, they're both in Kent. It is relatively contained at the moment, so try not to panic. Of course I understand that, but try not to panic too much, and we will come round or come back to that story later in the show. Now, coming up after news, are we ready for another U-turn?
Turn around. Every now and then I get a little bit lonely and you're never coming round.
This time over legal migration, the Home Secretary trying to stick with certain limits and measures but under increasing pressure. What will that result in? Plus, talking about pressure, the Prime Minister pressed six times as to whether the level of contact he had with Peter Mandelson and links with Jeffrey Epstein prior to his appointment and refused to answer. And here in London, it's the hardest place in the country to find a nursery for SEND children. S-E-N-D. Is that the reality that you've experienced? Those stories and more follow the 8 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 8 o'clock, President Trump says he knew nothing of Israel's attack on a major gas field in Iran yesterday and has promised it won't happen again. But he has warned that the United States will massively blow up the entire South Pars field if Iran keeps up retaliatory strikes on Qatar. The strikes on energy infrastructure in the Gulf has caused the price of oil to spike overnight. City AM's editor-in-chief Christian May is following market developments for LBC.
Oil is now touching again $110 a barrel. The gas price, of course, increasing. Analysts said that this is a turning point, that this is no longer just about the debate around the Strait of Hormuz and the transportation of oil and gas, but about the plumbing of the global energy system itself.
Two men have been charged in relation to spying for Iran. They're accused of the suspected surveillance of people and locations linked to the Jewish community in London last summer. The pair are due in court later today. The Bank of England will announce its latest decision on interest rates this lunchtime. Previous expectations of a cut have diminished because of the sharp rise in energy prices due to the Iran war. The bank's Monetary Policy Committee is likely to keep the benchmark rate at 3.75%. The Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, is to visit a meningitis vaccination centre in Kent today. After an outbreak in the county, 20 cases of the infection are being investigated. Two people have died. More than 600 students in Canterbury have now received vaccines against meningitis B. Chair of the National Pharmacy Association, Oliver Pickard, told Nick there's been a surge in demand for meningitis jabs.
Everyone is getting an increase in demand from everywhere in the UK, from the north of Scotland to Kent, obviously. To give you an idea, in my pharmacies, we had over, so I have four pharmacies and we have over 1,200 people booking yesterday or being added to a waiting list. I've not seen this level of demand for a vaccine since the beginning of COVID.
The Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, said yesterday there is plenty of stock of vaccine in the country. And plans to protect Britain's steel industry have been announced by the government. Ministers say the proposals will ensure the future of the sector. Plans include a new target to ensure that half of the steel used in Britain is made domestically. The current target is 30%. In the city, the FTSE 100 had just reopened at 10,305. It closed down 98 yesterday. The pound buys $1.32 and €1.15. LBC weather, sunny spells for much of the UK, some cloud for the northeast of England and large parts of Scotland, a high of 18 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
You know what you're getting with a conference. Laptop backpacks. Security pass lanyard.
If you could just pop this on.
Being asked, how was your journey in? An array of triangular sandwiches. Having to deal with a small crisis back at the office. Sometimes in life you just know what you're getting. Like a great night's sleep and a tasty breakfast. You know what you're getting with Premier Inn.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Morning, 3 minutes after eight on Thursday, the 19th of March. Another U-turn on the way, this time over migrants' rights. The former deputy leader of the party says it is distinctly un-British, the measures that the Home Secretary is reportedly pledging to stick with. What would be the right course of action there? In other news, good news for the steel industry. A new measure and strategy. We'll be giving you more details on that. Staying with the Prime Minister. Pressing times at Prime Minister's questions. Plenty of questions, but there would appear no answers as he was asked not once, not twice, but six times about exactly what level of contact he had with Peter Mandelson about his links with Jeffrey Epstein prior to being promoted to the London ambassador. Never mind a king's speech. What about a queen's tattoo of sorts? Eyebrows. We'll give you more details on that later in the show. And on the eve of Eid, an unholy row over Muslim prayer.
He said last night that Muslims praying in public are not welcome. He described it as an act of domination. If we're in my team, it'd be gone.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Well, it would appear the battle lines are drawn again as we might be heading to yet another U-turn. We've just done a count. We would make it the 15th U-turn, this time over migrants' rights. Now, the Home Secretary, Shabana Mahmood, wanted to make it harder for migrants to settle permanently. Currently, they can apply for indefinite leave to remain after 5 years. Ms. Mahmood wants this increased to 10 years, including for those already in the country, and in asylum seekers' cases, 20 years potentially. The former Deputy Prime Minister, Angela Rayner, says this is, quote, un-British and a breach of trust. It's a key government policy intended to take support away, of course, from Reform UK, and a test of whether Labour is really serious about getting a grip on the issue that voters say is of huge concern to them. So who's right, the Home Secretary or Angela Rayner? Indefinite leave to remain comes almost automatically after 5 years' residence in the country. I've referenced the Home Secretary, Shabana Mahmood. Here she is speaking with LBC last month, insisting she will go ahead with these proposals.
We're progressing full steam ahead with our reforms, and I'm already making those changes on moving to a temporary model of refugee status in our country. What I would say to colleagues across Parliament, but of course particularly in my own party, I do accept that some people are not comfortable with all of these reforms or don't agree. Disagreement in politics is a normal thing. The majority of my colleagues are also in agreement. This is a big problem for us. We've got a broken asylum system, and we have a legal migration system that's been open to unacceptable levels of abuse.
Well, we'll speak with one of the Home Secretary's colleagues, Rachel Maskell, in just a moment. But first, let's go to George Pascoe Watson, who's a broadcaster, columnist, former award-winning political editor at The Sun, now a partner with the firm Shillings, joining me now. How do you read this one? George, morning.
Nick, this is another example, isn't it, of the absolute crisis that Keir Starmer has in terms of controlling his own parliamentary party, his own MPs and members of the Lords, actually, where whatever he tries to do in big terms, big significant policies to tackle the issues which are really gripping Britain, he finds that he has to keep on going back on his word. Shabana Mahmood's very tough for Labour policy was only announced a few months ago, and she said she's going to stand by it. But, of course, the first whiff of left-wing opposition from his own MPs has meant that Downing Street yesterday changed the mood and said, well, actually, there may be some transition circumstances here, which basically means it's the beginning of a climb down. The Prime Minister cannot move forward with any confidence on anything of significance, which is aimed at a sort of centre policy of the nation is behind, without the left of his own party saying, no, 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 we don't want that. And it just underlines the weakness of the Prime Minister.
Where do you think the voter is or the voters are on this, George?
Well, we know that Shabana Mahmood, even yesterday, was circulating, or her friends were circulating around other Labour MPs, polling which says the British nation, British voters, are significantly in favour of a higher restriction on the immigration and settlement, the right to settlement in Britain. And so her policy is actually very, very in tune with the British voters. But the left wing of the Labour Party is in the ascendancy right now, and Keir Starmer has no way of putting them back in their box. They're all worried about losing their seats to the Greens on the left.
What about the threat from Reform UK on the right? Is this a policy that was designed to try and stave off or see off that threat?
It was indeed partly to try and make sure that those people who are centrist, who are not really Labour, not really Conservative, who are drifting around, people like my old readers at The Sun, who are really the kind of people who really can make a difference in an election, that's the sort of group of people that she wanted to appeal to, and Keir Starmer went along with it. But of course, in the Labour Party, he has to think about his own survival as a leader and Prime Minister, and that's the threat he has to deal with. Now, I have to say that Angela Rayner has made it quite clear privately that she's not all that interested in being leader of the Labour Party, but she is definitely on manoeuvres. She's definitely making speeches where she's beginning to set out her own policy stall. So, again, if you're in Downing Street around the Prime Minister's team, it adds to that sense of paranoia. What are they doing about me behind my back?
George, lastly, why, from your interpretation, if it's correct, why is the PM so hobbled?
He is the Prime Minister. He's the leader of a party which is split so many ways, and he became the Prime Minister of this country because the opposition to the Conservatives and everybody else was so great that he came in on a huge majority, but it was a paper-thin majority, really, because nobody really wanted him, and now all he can do is tiptoe forward without breaking this Ming vase that he's holding, and therefore he can't do anything bold at all.
Always good to have you on my show. Thanks, George Pascoe Watson, broadcaster, columnist, former award-winning political editor for The Sun newspaper, now partner with the firm Shillings. 8:10. Listening to that, Rachel Maskell, who is a Labour MP, representing York Central, and joins me now. Well, an interesting portrayal, depiction, picture of your party from George Pascoe Watson, somebody you probably know or certainly know of. Do you recognise that, Rachel? Morning.
Morning. Well, I do recognise the issue that people across the country are very concerned about migration, about the numbers there. And of course, we've got to look back as to why we're in this situation. Coming out of the Dublin Agreement was the biggest mistake of all. And of course, Nigel Farage was the person who forced that issue. And as a result of that, we weren't part of the Dublin Agreement anymore. And when we see Europe moving forward together, they've got their new asylum and management regulations coming out, which is a risk-sharing arrangement of people and resources across Europe. We need to be part of that. That is where our future should be. So crisis we're seeing with increased climate change, war, and, of course, famine and floods, we need to ensure that we are...
Well, I wonder if we can talk about the future of this particular bill.
Migration.
The future of this particular legislation. Where are you on that? There's 5 or 10 years.
Well, absolutely. The consultation has closed. I contributed to that. There's over 200,000 responses. That's going to take some time to delve into, to understand what people are saying in that consultation. But first of all, the measures suggest a retrospective application, so people who have come here on terms to change those terms. Of course, that would be a real anomaly, because we recognise that when law or other measures are applied, that they are about the future, not the past, and therefore we've got many people across our communities really concerned about their futures. So it's absolutely wrong to do that.
Rachel Maskell, you talk about retrospective. I mean, you'll probably be aware that more than 1.6 million people are forecast to claim settlement rights between 2026 and 2030. You talk about retrospective, but retrospectively, we changed the pension age, we changed student loan arrangements, we changed so many other things. Why can't we change this?
Look at what happened when the pension age changed, of course, retrospectively. We've still got an unresolved situation.
No, but answer the question. We can do it for pension age. Why can't we do it for this?
Well, it would suggest, you know, from the work of the PHSO that we can't do this, and that remains an ongoing dispute. And as a result of that, we absolutely should not be doing this retrospectively. People came here on terms, and we've got to honour those terms.
So we can change retrospectively young people's student loan arrangements, older people's working when the pension age, but we can't touch people who come to this country to make a living.
I'm saying there should be no retrospection.
But there has been. There should be peace and love on earth, and now we'll deal with the harsh realities of the life. There's not, so why can't there be retrospective changes in this field as well? I don't understand.
It's wrong, and if we look at the cases for and the case with the PHSO, we can see how wrong it is. And of course, those WASB women are still waiting for their compensation. So, of course, we should not be changing people's terms retrospectively. And I would say to the Home Secretary that she should not on this occasion. But also, the measures are completely wrong. It's completely un-Labour. The values put behind this, if I can give an example, that first of all, she is talking about you will get some reduction if you have had a high competency of language. They're talking about an A-level standard. Now, supposing you had a learning difficulty or perhaps you were deaf and you use British Sign Language, not even mentioned in the consultation, but you have to learn English, which is a different language. But also within that, you may find language learning difficult, but at least you're trying to. But it doesn't say about trying, it's about attainment to standards in language that many people in our country
haven't attained. You don't recognise this as a crisis, lastly, the number of people who might seek
to live here. I have said that, and I have provided the solution to that, which is being part of the risk-sharing arrangements, the asylum management regulations, and that's really where we should be putting our stake in the ground. And the reason for that, as we've heard from many people, is that this means that we're not carrying all the risk, which is what the new arrangements will do. But also, we've got to recognise that people have come here, for instance, from other countries, recognising that they're making a huge contribution to our country. We know that the migrant workforce...
Not all of them, of course.
Well, we can deal with the anomalies. There's no issue why we can't deal with the anomalies. And I think everyone would agree that. But the principle is that these are fellow citizens on our planet, and they should be treated with dignity as well.
They're not citizens yet. That seems to be the key, doesn't it? Rachel Maskell, thank you. Your Labour MP for York Central, setting out very cogently the other side of the coin to where Shabana Mahmood is, but who might be right? Your views follow the 8:15 LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
President Trump says the US will, in his words, massively blow up a major Iranian gas field if Tehran attacks Qatar's energy facilities again. The Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, is to visit a meningitis vaccination centre in Kent later after an outbreak in the county. And new data shows the rate of UK unemployment remained unchanged at 5.2% in the 3 months to January. LBC weather, sunny spells for much of the UK, cloudy for the northeast of England and large parts of Scotland, a high of 18 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Dave Goff. The M3 northbound is closed because of an accident where there's been a fuel spillage between Junction 3 for Lightwater and Junction 2 for the M25, so there are queues. On the M25 anti-clockwise, there are queues from Junction 29 for Romford to Junction 28 for the A12. That's after a lorry caught fire earlier. In Uxbridge, there are queues on the A40 going out of town. There's one lane blocked because of an accident after the Swakeley's roundabout. There are queues on the A3 northbound. The exit slip road at the Wisley interchange for the M25 is partly blocked because a lorry has broken down. There are delays in Morden Park. Grand Drive is partly blocked in both directions at Lower Morden Lane after an accident. And in Hornchurch, it's slow on the High Street. Eastbound is partly blocked. That's because a bus has broken down at North Street.
This is LBC.
The all-new, all-electric Toyota CHR Plus. Sleek, stylish and quietly reliable. Available with 0% APR representative with £1,500 deposit contribution and save £1,500 with the electric car grant. Get that Toyota electric feeling. Visit your nearest Toyota centre. Price from $34,495. Available on Toyota PCP when financed through Toyota Financial Services by 30th of June 2026. Optional final payment. Indemnities may be required. See website. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app. Download it now from your app store.
How does a $20 golf gadget end up being used as a bomb detector in war zones worldwide? I'm Alice Levine and this is Explosive Lies, the podcast exposing a scam that fooled governments and security services across the globe. Open our free Global Player app and search Explosive Lies to start listening today.
Turn up your taste buds with Dolmio Intensified Pasta Sauces. From mild creamy garlic and black pepper, to bold smoky garlic and sun-dried tomato,
whoa,
and spicy smoked paprika and chili.
Woo-hoo!
Try Dolmio Intensified Pasta Sauces with serious flavor. Dolmio, yeah!
So, what's on your to-do list today? Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax, and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 991234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
A Southern train is a place where you can have more me time. A chance to skip traffic and glide to wherever you need to be. With headspace to focus on more important matters. Like if that cloud is a starfish or sunflower. Fast journeys without the rush with great deals at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Coming to you, Thomas, the first call in just a minute. Let's just get some of the social media, some of the texts in. Suing Cambridge, that MP is another lefty person who hates the indigenous population. France introduces respective rules for immigrants all the time. This is weak and left-wing. Same subject, this comes in from Dave. If the Home Secretary U-turns on these immigration reforms, it would be game over for Labour. MPs who claim people arrived here as part of the Boris wave of contributing to our economy are absolutely naive and delusional. Unless you get more than half of them out, this country will continue on a downward spiral. Let's do one more before we take to your calls. This is from Nikki. I live and work in Italy for part of the year. We have a large English enclave. English immigrants out here can't even speak Italian to kindergarten level, let alone A-level, make no attempt to learn the language and the hypocrisy of it, or the English exceptionalism. Nikki, thank you. Tom's in Yarm in Yorkshire. Tom, what do you want to tell me? Good morning.
Nick, well, you said more to it there than your what you've been reading the text out, and right. Exactly what I said. The Labour Party, although I didn't vote Labour, and never have done in the whole of my life, and I'm 75 now, but I did agree with some of these things in their manifesto, like reducing migration to net zero. Look, within my circles, and that's more military circles, having served for 31 years.
Right.
Every single one, 100%, agree that we have got to get immigration down. Not just immigration, but we have got to start deporting people as soon as possible.
Who would we deport?
Well, we would deport everyone, first of all, who are here illegally. And that's the first thing we would do.
And where do we take them?
And I thought we would send them back to their own countries. We're far too soft in this country. It's no good saying, where would we send them? Where did they come from?
Well, let's say Somalia or Afghanistan.
Yes.
We're not allowed to send them to either of those countries because they're deep. Go on.
Nick, who says we're not allowed?
International law. European law. I'm so sorry. European law.
Do you mean the European
ECHR, human rights? ECHR, yeah.
Well, we've got to get out of it as quickly as possible. I mean, who are we as British people? Where's our backbone gone?
Well,
Are we finished? Are we going to hold our hands up now and say that within 50 years' time we will hand it over to all the immigrants in this country?
Well, hold on a second, Tom. I mean, this is a country that in great part was built by people arriving here from other parts of the world. And we have a long, and I would suggest, proud history of that, no?
Nick, they didn't arrive in their millions.
Well, we're not talking
about... They trickled through. I know you're an immigrant, and if I go back 350 years, which I have done on my tree, I come from Ireland. But right. Ireland then was part of Britain.
Right.
So I'm not an immigrant. I just moved around within my own country.
Right. Right, OK. But do you not welcome the fact that, and I appreciate there is now a major issue about the level, but immigration has proved hugely, has in the past, or had proved hugely successful in this country?
Nick, how far back are you going? 70 years ago, when the Windrush came into this country, we were warned what would happen. And well, it has happened. It's all unfolded in front of our...
Tom, we wouldn't have had hospitals, we wouldn't have had the buses running, we wouldn't have had post-war British boom without welcoming those folk in, Tom. Let's be honest.
Yes, within limits.
Well, this is where I think the problem is, isn't that there are no limits now, and it is seen, although it's relatively small, it is thought that somewhere in the region of 40, 45,000 people arrive in this country unchecked with no papers, and that's what distresses and concerns so many people, Tom.
That's just one of the problems. That's a small part of the problem. We bring students into this country, which is fantastic. They bring money into this country, but then they bring their families in, and then they stay. And then they wait until they get nationalisation, and then they can stay in the country forever. So what Siobhan McMoody is doing, I agree with totally. And she's Labour. I've never voted Labour, like I said, but I do agree with her policy. It's a start. That's all it is, Nick, a start. And if you don't make that start and get it moving now, we're just going to compound the problem with millions and millions of people in areas where I come from. I was born in Blackburn.
Right.
And Blackburn is no longer an English town.
Well, what do you... It is an English... I think it might even be an English city, actually.
I'll change it. You're right. It no longer has an English culture.
Tom, it is an English... Of course it's an English city, Tom. Why would you say that?
It no longer has an English culture.
Well, you're obviously talking about the number, I would imagine, of arrivals from Asia. Is that what you're saying? I don't know, Blackburn.
Yes, I've been back to Blackburn.
All right.
Spoken to people, looked at what's happening. Some of my family are still living there.
Right. And you don't feel... Okay. Well, look, I hear what you say. Thank you for your service, undoubtedly, as a military bloke. I thank you for your call, I think, although it's some of the areas we have to be very careful because we don't want to inflame anything. But, Tom, I hear what you say. Thank you. And I think Labour could lose a lot of votes with the sentiments that you've expressed. 8:24. Daniel's in Brighton. Daniel, your reaction to that, your reaction to where the Home Secretary finds herself. Good morning.
Hello. I'm mainly ringing up to just ring about the indefinite leave to remain. Mm. My wife came here a couple of years ago on a spousal visa.
Oh, yes.
That costs about £7,000 to apply for, which includes money for the NHS when they apply.
That's right, yes. I know that. I've heard about that.
We then have to pay that same amount for the extension.
Yeah.
At present, she's also pregnant, so she will be the mother of a British national soon.
Right.
And then if the indefinite leave to remain... for family visas, spousal visas, then increases to 10 years. That chucks another probably £20,000 on what we had to pay already. Considering that she's also working and paying tax for us and our family, it would just make a massive, massive difference.
What would the impact be then? Because would you have to spend another £7,000 then if it was extended? How would that work?
What's not clear at the moment, because of the consultation, is whether migrants who are already legally here, including those on family visas, there it would extend to 10 years before they could get indefinite leave to remain. Therefore, because you get a visa and you get part of a visa for 2.5 years, presumably you would then have to apply for another 2, which would cost that additional amount.
But, sorry, pardon my utter ignorance here. Surely if she's married... You're British, are you?
Yeah.
If her spouse is a Briton, why doesn't that help? I'm sorry.
Because I'm British at the moment. When they release the new white paper, they weren't going to involve family dependents of those of British nationals. But with this new consultation, it's not clear as to whether that does affect... the wives or husbands or dependents of British nationals.
So it's not automatic that a Briton marries someone from another country, they live in this country, and that person, the spouse, gets British citizenship, despite having a British husband or wife?
No, they won't. So when we were married, when she moved here,
right,
you still have to pay for that spousal visa, she still has to pay for the NHS. Another 2 years later, you have to pay for that extension, even though she's working.
What do you hope comes out of the white paper, lastly, Daniel?
Well, my preference would be that they take into account marriage and family visas and spousal visas for British nationals and their dependents rather than affecting the lives of people who are living here and were brought up here.
And, of course, we're about to give birth to British citizens, I would imagine. Daniel, good luck with your wife's pregnancy. Thank you. 8:27 the time. Caroline's in Lewes in Sussex. Caroline, your view on this. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Good morning. Well, I'm finding it more and more irritating to hear certainly Labour ministers refer back to the Dublin Agreement and saying that everything went wrong because we came out of Europe, etc. Can I remind you, the Dublin Agreement was not working. That was the reason, half the reason why people were getting so angry about the EU and their power over us, because there was no, it really was not working.
Well, the key, as I recall from doing debates at the time, was the supposed first entry aspect, which is the country that you arrived in, i.e. France or Italy, you actually had to stay there, but of course many people didn't.
No, because it was unworkable. So please don't let them say to you, oh, well, it's because we don't have the Dublin Agreement that we've got the problem now. That was not the case. It did not work. And can I just also take you to the point that Blair allowed the accession countries to come in here and work from day one, and our Western European friends did not. And so there seems to have been a anti-migration, because it was nothing was controlled.
Caroline, thank you. Mac, you'll have your say. We're going to take an early news bulletin because the government minister's time has moved around. There's much to put to him. So at just coming up on 8:29, this is Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari. LBC News headlines then, Dominic Ellis.
Wholesale gas prices in the UK and Europe have risen by more than 20% after Iranian attacks on Qatar's main gas complex. President Trump says the US will retaliate with force if Tehran continues to target its Gulf neighbours, but Iran has said it was retaliating for Israeli strikes yesterday. Health leaders say the number of cases of meningitis linked to an outbreak in Kent is likely to rise. Two people have died and another 18 suspected cases are currently being investigated. And UK unemployment has remained at its highest rate in 5 years. The Office for National Statistics says the jobless rate was 5.2% in the 3 months to January. LBC weather, sunny spells for much of the UK, some cloud for the northeast of Scotland and England, a high of 18 degrees.
This is LBC.
You know what I love about Eurostar? The comfortable seats with lots of legroom. You know what I don't love? Playing hide and seek with my feet. Or playing footsies with my neighbour.
Ouch!
Sorry. Now that I'm on the Eurostar, the only game I'm playing is stretchy, stretchy leg, and I always win. That's the ticket.
Eurostar. Together we go further. Legroom varies by class of service.
Easter eggs? M&S, of course. I mean the new Choc Marx egg with salted pretzel pieces and honey almond nougat is pretty spectacular. And what about the Big Daddy loaded half egg filled with caramel and peanut chunks and dark chocolate pieces? Or the Swiss chocolate crispy cloud egg with crunchy cornflakes, salted caramel and almond? Yes, please. So, if you're looking for amazing eggs, it's got to be M&S. This is not just food. This is M&S food. Selected stores.
You know, when Helen used to get home from work, I'd ask, "How are you?" "Fine," she'd say. She clearly wasn't. After 10 years in IT, she was on autopilot. Then she found this job, training up-and-coming tech whizzes at the college. Same skills, but with new people, new challenges. Now when she gets back, I get the full debrief. Can't get a word in.
Give your skills new life. Train others. Search jobs in further education.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
8:31, come back to our conversation. Mac, you will be the next caller, but as I said, we moved it around a little bit because we have the benefit now of speaking to a government minister on what would appear to be good news, a drive to get more jobs, putting some steel into that, and I speak literally, a new steel strategy to be outlined for trade by Trade Minister Sir Chris Bryant, who joins me now. Good to have you on, Sir Chris. What is it you and your colleagues are announcing today? Good morning to you.
Did you just start with, would appear to be good news?
It would appear to, because I want to hear all the details from you, Sir Chris.
It's just that tad little bit of cynicism in there?
That has to be applied to all, by all journalists at all times, Sir Chris. You know that as well as I.
All right. Anyway, look, so what we... You're absolutely right. We're putting steel into our steel strategy. I think it's shocking that when the Labour government left office in 2010, we were still producing 9.7 million tonnes of steel in the UK. When the Tories left office in 2024, we were only producing 4 million tonnes of steel in the UK. And that means we're only meeting 30% of the steel needs that we have in the economy in the UK. We need to turn that around. So, number one, where there are artificially low level prices for international steel coming into the UK, crowding out the British market, we are going to say, I'm sorry, there's a tough measure we're introducing. We're cutting the amount of that steel that can come in by 60%. Anything that comes in above that will have to pay a 50% surcharge, a tariff. And that is to create a level playing field for British Steel, because we want to get to a position not just where we're protecting the 40,000 jobs that there are already in UK steel, but also we are enhancing that, getting that back to pre-COVID levels and investing in that economy. We think it's important strategically for the country, because we have to have a UK manufacturing base. One of our key sectors is advanced manufacturing that requires steel, and so does the building of homes, so will our defence strategy as we spend more on defence over the coming years. All of that needs a strong national steel production sector, and that's what we're determined to do today.
What can you tell me about this supposed row over virgin steel production? What is it, and why are some people getting quite aerated about it, Sir Chris?
So some people would argue that we should be able to do every single kind of steel in the UK, whereas what we're trying to say is there are sectors of steel that we already do in the UK and we want to make them more competitive. That's why we've provided significant support with energy prices for all the sectors, including steel, cement and glass, which are very dependent on energy. 90% we've taken that up to, making it more competitive with other countries in Europe. But we also need to, but we're doing, and we're restricting the entry of artificially low priced steel in the kinds of steel that we can already produce in the UK or could produce in the near future. So we're not trying to do everything in this sphere, but we are trying to make sure that the sectors that we will be providing from UK steel 50% of the steel into the UK. And incidentally, we're announcing today support, because you will have noticed that the Nigerian president has been here for a state visit this week. Yes. We're announcing a deal in Nigeria where we're going to be helping redevelop a couple of their ports. £70 million worth of UK steel will be going into those ports. So that's the kind of place where we can increase the demand and make sure that we've got a strong sector in the UK.
All right. If we're talking about demand, can I move you to another area, if I may, Minister? And the demand, of course, for gas and for diesel and for oil and the strikes we've seen on Iran's South Pars gas field. What will the government be doing to monitor those prices and to try and allay the fears of motorists and those seeking to heat their homes?
So we've already introduced one measure over the last week, because there's 1.7 million homes in the UK that rely on oil for their central heating, and we're already providing support for them. Obviously, we've got the price cap, which for residential properties, which lasts until June, and we're monitoring the situation. We want to get de-escalate the war in Iran so that we can get trade back flowing as much as possible. And the Secretary of State for Desnes, for energy, and the Chancellor have already been gathered all the different oil and gas producers and distributors together to talk about how we can make sure that we keep all of this closely monitored. We will also look, of course, the fuel price cut thing. I've forgotten what it's called. Fuel duty.
Fuel checker?
No. Well, that's a good thing as well. Thank you very much. You should do this job sometime, Nick.
No, the country's suffered enough. I'll stay where I am, thank you.
I don't know where to go with that. So there is a fuel checker, which is actually great, because one of the things that's really irritated me down in South Wales is sometimes you see the local petrol station is charging a lot more than the one 10 miles down the road, and you want to go, why? So we have got a fuel checker. You can look online, you can check where you can get your petrol and your diesel cheapest locally. It's the provisions that we will look at again in the autumn, which we're keeping under control until September.
All right. A couple of other things to discuss. Can you assure my listeners that the migration plans, as outlined by your colleague Shabana Mahmood, will go ahead unchanged?
That is certainly our plan, yes. Look, I think it's really important that, of course, we're a welcoming country. Migrants have delivered enormous things to this country. And I remember when I was a kid being really... We went to live in Spain with my parents, and I was really proud that we all learnt Spanish. We learnt how to cook Spanish dishes. We became part of the local community and so on. And I think that that's a really important part of how, we welcome people into our community. If they're going to stay here forever, then, of course, they want to contribute and they want to be part of our society.
Can you clarify, as regards the vaccines for meningitis, Wes Streeting, another of your colleagues, said that supplies are there, there's nothing to worry about. But meanwhile, the Independent Pharmacists Commission, Association's chief executive, said her members can't get any. What is the truth as you see it, Minister?
Well, I've had meningitis myself, so I know that this is a really important issue. There's no reason why you would. I had it when it was 21. I had viral meningitis, which is different from bacterial, obviously. Miserable, absolutely appalling, and I fully understand why everybody must be anxious and nervous, in particular anybody close to the outbreak that we've seen. I mean, meningitis does happen. There are some 250, 280 cases a year in the UK.
But what of supplies of the vaccine, Minister? So where are we on that?
I'm assured that they are resilient and we have enough. I think most of what we've been talking about is antibiotics, actually, because 2,500 doses of antibiotics have been given out, and the bacterial meningitis responds well to antibiotics. Of course, the key thing is to spot it early.
Yes, it's the MenB vaccine, of course. That's what's causing concern away from the antiviral. And that is where there seems to be... And I bet reminding everybody you're a trade minister, but there does seem a degree of confusion, Minister.
I'm assured that we have sufficient supplies.
All right.
But I'm right at the edge of my knowledge there, Nick.
OK, well, we won't push any further then. This you'll be able to resolve for me as a plain-speaking bloke.
Oh, dear.
Prime Minister's questions, there doesn't seem to be an answer provided when Kemi Badenoch asked not once, not twice, but six times about the level of contact between the Prime Minister and Peter Mandelson prior to his elevation to Zaman in Washington. Why is the Prime Minister unable to answer that question, do you imagine?
I wasn't at Prime Minister's questions yesterday because I was in the Netherlands trying to sort out a deal about a better deal in our relationship with the European Union. But look, as I understand it, the point about whether the Prime Minister had spoken to Peter Mandelson had already been addressed. And look, I mean, the truth is, Peter Mandelson should not have been appointed. The Prime Minister agrees he shouldn't have appointed him. He takes responsibility for that decision and has directly apologised to the families and the people who were affected by the appalling behaviour of Jeffrey Epstein. So it just seemed a bit odd to me that I think this has already been addressed. The answer is already out there. I don't know what more there is to know.
Last minute or so together, can we talk jobs? And obviously the news about Port Talbot is great because your constituency of Rhondda and Ogmore, if my geography is right, is neighbouring, so that will provide security and we celebrate that. But figures this morning show unemployment is stuck at its highest level since the pandemic, payroll jobs continuing to fall. Labour isn't working in this area, is it? Why not, Minister?
I haven't seen the precise numbers because I think they came out since I started doing the round this morning. So I've been doing this since 6:45 this morning. So I don't know what the precise numbers are. But look, two things that I think are good. Number one, the OBR said in the spring statement that they expect our unemployment levels to fall significantly by the time of the next general election. In other words, during this Parliament. And secondly, I think I'm right in saying that in the last 100 years, there have only been 2 years where we've seen a higher level of employment. And of course, you know, there are two sides to this coin. One is about unemployment. We do need to do more in particular about youth unemployment, which is why I was really glad that Pat McFadden announced on Monday this deal whereby anybody who's taking on a young person who's been out of work looking for an apprenticeship will be supported with £3,000 from the government. I think that that's... We need to tackle the issue of youth unemployment because that is not just about our future, it's about our today.
The figure we talk of is 5.2%, just so you know that. Lastly, one of your opponents, Nick Timothy, in hot water on the eve of Eid, and of course we wish everyone Eid Mubarak, but on the eve of Eid, having some rather disobliging comments about a Muslim prayer ceremony in central London. What should happen to Mr. Timothy, Sir Chris?
Well, he should be sacked by Kemi Badenoch. I was absolutely shocked. Just because some Muslims are praying in public. It is not what he uses. I think two phrases he used. One was, it was an act of domination.
Yes.
I don't get that at all. That, it seems to me, is flat out prejudice. And secondly, then, that this was out of the Islamist book. A playbook.
Yes.
Well, I think both of those phrases are profoundly wrong, and he should apologise and he should be sacked. I mean, look, I used to be a priest in the Church of England. We used to do Palm Sunday processions. We used to do, on Maundy Thursday, which is coming up soon at Easter, all the priests in the diocese would process into the cathedral. Is that an act of domination? No, of course it's not. I think people should be free to celebrate their religion in the way that they want in public.
Grateful for your time talking about how the steel strategy, the ambition 50% of steel used in Britain, job security in that part of the country. Sir Chris Bryant, Trade Minister, thanks for your input on that. 8:42. We are going to have more conversation about that front bencher, of course, Nick Timothy and his views on Muslim prayer. But let's take a call just for the news. Mac in Bethnal Green, I'm sorry you've been hanging on so long. You are concerned and considerably invested in this migration debate. Tell everybody why, Mac. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, I am, because I'm a New Zealander living in London on a visa. By the way, I absolutely love it here, and I'd love to stay longer.
Good having you on board. Thank you. Keep earning, keep paying the tax. We need more of you.
Well, that's what I wanted to discuss, because I don't know if all of your listeners are aware what it actually costs to be on these visas and how tricky the pathway can be.
Go ahead.
So my first three-year one will be about £2,000. I'm nearing the end of that.
Mm-hmm.
After that, I then have to be sponsored by my employer. That costs them, and it costs me. Mm-hmm. And I have to earn a minimum amount for my range. So basically, you have to be a high performer in your field to get mm-hmm. that.
Right.
Then that is a five-year visa. My first visa does not count towards ILR. So under the current rules, it will be eight.
Remain. Yep.
Correct. Yep. Under the current rules, it will be 8 years in this country before I'm eligible to apply for it, in which time I have not been eligible for any benefits, any government support, except for the NHS, of which I contribute heavily to.
Tell everybody what it costs you to get yourself NHS or to be covered by NHS treatment.
So, obviously, I pay national insurance and tax, etc., and then it's an additional £500 every year.
Yeah, I do think it's important that we make that point, by the way, so thank you for just spelling that out. On you go, Mac. Yeah.
So under these current rules, that could be changing from 5 to 10, plus my first 3, which will mean 13 years in this country before I essentially feel accepted by it or at home. And in that time, I would have supported myself completely. So I'm not sure why there seems to be this concern that suddenly, after 13 years of solid employment, or let's say 8 under the old rules, I'm going to turn around and jump on the benefit.
So here's the thing. You've been here all those years. You've paid all that tax. You pay an additional levy so that you can avail yourself of NHS treatment. If this were to come in, if it were to be pushed back to 10, would you consider leaving and going back to NZ?
Potentially, because the problem comes that if for some reason my employment doesn't work out or I want to change employers and I can't find another one to sponsor me, it's very tricky to stay here. And you're very tied to having a good job and a job that you enjoy.
Really enjoyed our conversation. Max, stay in touch. It's a long way off. It's still under consultation. We need folk like you, and thanks for all your input. Have a safe one. Sean in Muswell Hill actually makes a point, I think I did, to the Labour MP. The government will retrospectively change our pension age, student loan arrangements, and does it all the time. Why is ILR, indefinite leave to remain, any different? Good point. Thanks for that, Sean. Ben in Stockwell, why is the Home Secretary making it harder for people already here? The problem is illegal migrants. You should focus on stopping the small boats and other forms of illegal migration. All right, just about 5 minutes or so ago, I touched on this controversy formed as a result of comments from the Shadow Cabinet Minister Nick Timothy and this post on social media. You can see Muslims praying in Trafalgar Square and then... And on the eve of Eid, this is described, as you already said, as being some way appalling, as he calls it, and a form of an act of domination. We'll look in more detail at that. It's 8:45, LBC News Headlines, Dominic Ellis.
The Trade Minister has told Nick the government will keep support for households under review after a jump in energy prices after attacks on oil facilities in the Middle East.
Health leaders say the number of cases of meningitis linked to an outbreak in Kent is likely to rise, and UK unemployment has remained at its highest rate in 5 years. LBC weather, sunny spells for much of the UK, cloudy for the northeast of England and Scotland, a high of 18 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Dave Goff. The M3 northbound is closed because of an accident where there's been a fuel spillage between Junction 3 for Lightwater and Junction 2 for the M25, so there are delays. In Uxbridge, there are long delays on the A40 going out of town. Two lanes are blocked because of an accident after the Swakeley's roundabout. There are queues on the A3 northbound. The exit slip road at the Wisley interchange for the M25 is partly blocked because a lorry has broken down. On the North Circular, it is slow in both directions to the Beckton roundabout. That's because a bus has broken down on the roundabout. In Hornchurch, it's slow on the High Street. Eastbound, it's partly blocked. That's also because a bus has broken down at North Street. And on the trains, East Midlands Railway have delays of up to 20 minutes and some cancellations between St Pancras and Bedford after problems with the signals.
LBC.
At Kia, we know that inspiration begins with a first. Your first job, your first love, your first home. Now it's time for your first drive in the new Kia EV2 at our first drive weekends. It's your chance to be one of the first to test drive the Kia EV2 with its innovative technology and elegant eye-catching design. It's small in size, but big in personality. Discover what driving electric really means. Search Kia First Drive Weekends to reserve your place today.
Kia, movement that inspires.
Call Nick Ferrari now, 0345 6060 973, LBC.
Hi, I'm looking for a pair of jeans.
Right. Low slung, slouchy, wide leg, bower leg, curved leg, flared, straight or skinny?
Blue?
Fashion. It's hard to keep on top of. Other things, like the upcoming changes to renting, are a bit easier. As a landlord, you will need to get on top of these important changes. They will affect how you manage your tenancies. Act now. Read the guidance at gov.uk/renting-is-changing.
What's the best present you ever got for your birthday? I bet it wasn't as life-changing as £1 million. Every week with the birthday draw, there's £1 million to be won. And you can enter from as little as £1, or via post. Enter by midnight on Sunday, and your special day could win you £1 million. Visit thebirthdaydraw.com. Is it your lucky day? From Global and ITV. 18 plus, UK only, no purchase necessary.
At AJ Bell, we believe investing is for everyone, even people who know nothing about investing. Like Keith, who thought dividends were a boy band. Jessica, who thought compound interest was a prison dating app. And Sue thought FTSE 100 was a bit of under-the-table fun, which surprised her accountant.
Oh, no.
If we can make investing feel good for them, it's no wonder which have recommended us 8 years running. AJ Bell, feel good investing. The value of your investments can go up or down.
Pain in my hip. I keep feeling dizzy. I'm getting migraines more often.
There's another way to contact your GP practice, by simply sending your symptoms and requests through their website or the NHS app. We're delivering an NHS fit for the future. Tap it, type it, and we'll take care of it.
Julia, how do you spell vertebrae?
Oh, just type pain in the neck.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973.
10 minutes before nine. Anna in Manchester. Should the government U-turn on this migrants plan, or are they roughly broadly on track? Which would you say, Anna? Good morning.
Good morning. I don't think they should at all. I think that I'm so sad for those who are legitimate, but there are lots of persons like myself who are victims of what we call a visa girl marriage or a visa husband marriage.
Oh, right. What's happened to you?
My story is too long, but basically I was just used and married by somebody who literally didn't have an interest in me nor my child that he left me with. The child maintenance service is a total mess. And
here's what I don't understand, because the first call I took on this, Anna, was Daniel, who's having a devil's own job to get his wife, well, can't get his wife, British citizenship, and fears that he might have another 5 years. And yet here's you saying, and I don't dispute it, because this is what I understood to be the case, that if you marry someone, then you can get into this country. So what happened then?
I mean, my person was in this country already, never had, at school, so we met at university, never had any interest in a marriage, had an MO of single mother with children, and had several of us on the go. And when I found out it was so late, I wrote to the Home Office to inform them that, hold on, don't send these documents I realized he's really just marrying me for papers. The Home Office did not even realize he got his documents in my house and I wasn't even aware. And we never lived together, married, but he never moved in. The Home Office needs to be able to vet more homes, to check that these relationships are real. And I really feel sad for those people who are real.
But that's the key, isn't it? Like Daniel, the caller I took about, I don't know, half an hour or so ago. He's very
genuine. I heard him.
Yeah, he's very genuine. So how do we root out people like your, if I can call him your ex, and look after folk like Daniel's wife? Like, this is the challenge, isn't it?
In my case, the Home Office did not check. They never once come to my house to check that I was living with this man. He always had his own room, a room I couldn't go to as his wife. The day we got married, he never came to my house. He went to his room. Mm. So there are lots of pressures. I know it's getting better, but there's lots of pressure. I have a child who's left behind, who he doesn't even look after. And the child maintenance service is a mess. But I just really felt so impassioned about it because I have suffered so much as a result of this. And the Home Office did not do enough. So I'm glad it's happening, but sad for those. I think the Home Office need to be more in touch with these families, check that people are living together, check that the marriages are real. I got married. I don't have one picture to show because right. My ex-husband brought his own photographer because all it was about proving to the Home Office that he is married to a British citizen.
Anna, thank you for that. Just feature a couple of you. Come to where you're called Gohar when I can. This comes in from James in West Hampstead. Your caller, Tom, is right. I think large swathes of Britain have changed. Walk through parts of London. It does not feel British. Same subject. This comes in from... Mirat. I want to echo Daniel, your caller. Similar position as a British spouse. My wife on a spousal visa. She was also working, paying taxes. We had a fiancé visa too. She's also pregnant with our second child. There's a thorny issue over ILR, independent leave to remain. Okay, let's come to other matters. I'll get callers in if I can. But it is a big day for the Conservative Party today as they release their manifesto for the local elections, which are really not that far away. You can certainly count it in weeks. And here are the more details. It's Party Chairman, Conservative MP Kevin Hollenrake. What is it, the main drive that you and your colleagues are going to be putting forward today? Chairman, good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Well, we're very keen to get Britain working again, fix some of the problems people see on their high streets in terms of shops closing or potholes, those kind of things. We know Conservative councils are better at fixing those kind of things whilst keeping council taxes low. And those are the local things we can do. But nationally, of course, what we're pushing the government to do, which would have immediate effect on people who are suffering in terms of the cost of living crises that we're seeing right now, are the cheap power plan, cutting energy costs by 20%, fuel duty, freezing fuel duty, and pumping more oil and gas in the North Sea. All will have a combined effect to ease pressure on local households.
Now, of course, we're talking local elections, but of course, when the country was under Conservative as a leader, as the government, we still had shops closing and potholes in the road, so why should it be any different locally?
Well, there's no doubt, you know, the high street's under pressure right now. We did a lot to try and help through that period of time with things like small business rates relief and the businesses that were first in the queue for the support we gave through COVID and the cost of living crisis were many of those high street businesses and retail ones that we're referring to. But nevertheless, you know, we do make mistakes in government, of course, but also we do some good things too. But right. We're under new leadership now. You've got Kebby Beardnock. She's a leader with backbone. She's very straight, very decisive. It's what the country needs right now.
What does success look like in those local elections, Mr. Chairman?
Well, listen, these are not going to be easy elections for us, Nick. I think it's fair to say. A lot of these seats were contested last in 2021 and 2022. So we don't think this is going to be an easy night for us. But we do, on May the 7th, when it comes. Mm-hmm. But I think we will see some successes. We're confident of doing well in parts of London, Westminster, Wandsworth, Barnet, places like that, Croydon. Places like Solihull in the West Midlands. So there are parts of the country we expect to do better in, but it's going to be difficult. We know we're rebuilding from where we were 2024, but most people can see that Kebby Beardnock has got the kind of strength of leadership that people want to see, and she's where I go up and down the country, I talk to members and to members of the public, where she's increasingly cutting through and seeing the kind of person we need to replace at some point, Keir Starmer.
Yes, I mean, if you look at the polls, of course, you're trailing way behind Reform UK. Mr. Chairman. Oh, why might that be?
Well, we've closed the gap, actually, Nick, if you look at the polls. But one thing the polls should show you, and I think they do, is Kemi Badenoch is now the most popular leader on a head-to-head basis of all the party leaders in the UK. We're the most trusted on the economy again. We're most trusted by business again. So these are going to be critical success factors, particularly when it comes to a general election. But we know we've got work to do to restore confidence and trust in the British public. That's part of my job to do, to make sure that people can see we've changed, we're under new leadership, but that's going to be very effective new leadership, and that's much needed right now.
How many local authorities are you defending in England?
We have just over 1,140 councillors we are defending.
Going to keep them all?
No, of course not. We'll lose some, but we'll gain some others, and that's what we're keen to do.
Where do you think you'll be if you net it out? Where will you be?
The key thing for me, Nick, and I don't want to give you a number like that, but the key thing for me, in the local elections in 2025, we got 15% of the vote. We want to see progress from there. So that's maybe we can have a conversation about that on May the 7th, 8th.
All right, we may well talk then. Before I let you go, what should happen to your senior colleague, Nick Timothy, with the rather disobliging comments he's made about Muslims praying in London on the eve of Eid, Mr. Chairman?
Well, I think Nick was right. I think that kind of exclusive event in a public location, which was a ticket-only event in a public place, is wrong. That's not to say that we don't support, of course, freedom of religion, and we engage all the time. We had an iftar event. It was an iftar event,
yes,
I think.
Yes,
and
was.
We had one in central office, Conservative central office, only a week or two ago, which I attended, and many people of the Muslim faith do. And can I say, I have had messages about Nick and about some of my comments I made earlier on this particular matter from moderate Muslims who agree with the stance Nick has taken and the stance the party has taken on this matter.
They are not, they as in prayer in public, they are not welcome in our public places. Why not, Mr. Chairman?
That's not to say Muslims are not welcome in our public places.
No, prayer, acts of prayer, ritual prayer.
Have you attended,
I mean, I don't know whether you have, but have you ever attended a papal visit when they come to this country? There's always hold these. I've attended two. That's wrong, is it? When a Pope visits the United Kingdom, Catholics, in fact, I've attended when nuns were there, the nuns should not be allowed to pray to their Holy Father.
Well, those are not exclusive events. I'm not a Catholic, Nick. You may be. I'm not a Catholic. But I would be free to attend that. And that's something that's a public spectacle. You know, carol service in Trafalgar Square would be a performance. Sikhs dancing in Trafalgar Square would be a public performance. That's an inclusive event. We see this as being an exclusive event.
But and how does it affect anyone's life? It's not like they took over the whole of Trafalgar Square. They had an area that was sectioned off so they could celebrate and pray. What I thought that would be part of living in multicultural United Kingdom. Well, clearly I'm wrong in the views of the Conservative Party.
Well, we're entitled to our views, Nick. I reverse the question. Why would you need to do an organised event like that, which is only a prayer event, it wasn't a performance, in a public space? That's the questions Nick is asking.
But what's your problem with that?
But what's the problem with it? Exclusive event in a public place, those should be inclusive spaces. This wasn't a performance. This was people simply praying in that place, a sectioned-off area, a ticket-only event. No, I've got a problem with it, Nick.
Where's the tolerance gone, Kevin?
That's just wrong, Nick. We completely tolerate the Muslim faith. We support the Muslim faith. All moderate Muslims we should support in this country. We support freedom of religion, freedom of speech. This is freedom of speech acting in effect today.
All right. Grateful for your time. That manifesto, let's come back to that. It is the launch of the local election manifesto. Get Britain working again. Try and get those shops open and the potholes filled. We may well return to that other argument. So thank you for your time on that. Kevin Hollenrake, who's the Conservative Party chairman, and we will actually, I think, start this hour with that conversation about that prayer event. Do you see that as an act of domination and division? In other news, staying in London, it is the hardest place in England to find nursery places for SEND, S-E-N-D, children. Do you agree with that? And never mind a king's speech, what about a queen's tattoo of sorts? Yes, Queen Camilla, it is revealed, has a tattoo of sorts. But where? London. No, not where in the city. Where on her body? Yes, we'll get into more detail about the queen's tattoo as well. 9 o'clock news on LBC. Here's next.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 9 o'clock, UK gas prices have soared over 20% after fresh strikes hit energy infrastructure in the Middle East. President Trump has warned Iran he will blow up its biggest gas field if Tehran continues to target Qatar's main plant. Mr. Trump also said he didn't know that Israel was going to strike Iran's South Pars gas field yesterday. Minister for Trade, Sir Chris Bryant, has told Nick this morning that support for households here are constantly under review.
We've already introduced one measure over the last week because there's 1.7 million homes in the UK that rely on oil for their central heating, and we're already providing support for them. Obviously, we've got the price cap, which for residential properties, which lasts until June, and we're monitoring the situation. We want to get de-escalate the war in Iran so that we can get trade back flowing as much as possible.
Two men have been charged with spying for Iran. They're accused of the suspected surveillance of people and locations linked to the Jewish community in London. LBC reporter Fraser Knight is following developments.
It's claimed that the spying happened in July and August last year on behalf of the Iranian Intelligence Service. And while police say they know the allegations will concern members of the Jewish community, officers have said they hope this investigation shows they won't hesitate to act if they think there might be a threat to safety. The two men, aged 40 and 22, will appear in court later.
Health leaders say the number of cases of meningitis linked to an outbreak in Kent is likely to rise. Two people have died and another 18 suspected cases are currently being investigated. More than 600 students in the Canterbury area have received vaccines against meningitis B. Sir Keir Starmer is understood to be looking at how to water down some migration changes after a backlash from Labour MPs. Sources have told LBC that ministers are looking at tweaks to proposals on toughening the criteria for migrants to gain permanent residency. The plans have been criticised by the former Deputy Prime Minister Angela Rayner in recent days. She described them as un-British. And the UK's rate of unemployment was unchanged at 5.2% in the 3 months to January. Official data released this morning also shows that pay growth slowed to an annual rate of 3.8%. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 164 points at 10,139. The pound buys $1.32 and €1.15. LBC weather, sunny spells for much of the UK, some cloud around for the northeast of England and large parts of Scotland, a high of 18 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Get 25% off coffee and pastries at Cafe Nero with Compare Market. Take it away, Sergeant.
I need a Nero. I'm holding up for a Nero to get a flat white. It's gotta be strong and it's gotta taste good and it's gonna be made just right. I need a Nero.
Only with the Compare the Market app, the simplest way to save.
When you take out a qualifying product, one membership a year, 25% off barista-made drinks and pastries, app only two codes per day, exclusions and T's and C's apply.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning. 4 minutes after nine, Thursday, the 19th of March. Towards the end of Ramadan, as we approach Eid, one of the holiest days in the Muslim calendar, a senior Conservative decides to go on the attack and talk about an act of open prayer as being an act of domination. And he's just been supported in full by the Conservative Party chairman. I'm amazed, but we'll take your reaction on that. London is the hardest place in the country to find nursery places for SEND children. Is that correct? And never mind the King's speech. We have the Queen's tattoo. That is, of course, Tattoo by Loreen, Sweden's winning Eurovision entry in 2023. But where is Queen Camilla's tattoo? Buckingham Palace. No, whereabouts on her body? That's later in the hour.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 60 60973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
If I sound a little bit bemused or puzzled, well, more bemused or puzzled than I normally do, it's the defence just offered by the Conservative Party chairman. in this story over the Prime Minister calling Sir Kemi Badenoch to fire Shadow Justice Secretary Nick Timothy, who made, in the views of the Prime Minister, appalling comments about Muslims praying in central London. Now, as ever, we start with the chronological part of this. For covering any story, it's best if you do it chronologically. So it all began with a video post from Shadow Justice Secretary Nick Timothy showing Muslims praying in Trafalgar Square earlier this week. This has been organised by the Ramadan Tent Project, aiming to improve relations, it says, between different communities. The charity hosted about 20 open iftar meals. That's what you have when you break your fast, if you are a Muslim. And I wish you happy Eid for tomorrow, as I understand it is. And in that post, Timothy wrote, listen carefully to these words, mass ritual prayer in public places is an act of domination. Going on, perform these rituals in mosques, if you wish, but they are not welcome in our public places and shared institutions. Well, here's the moment Sir Keir Starmer took aim at this during PMQ. He was, it's fair to say, being a little bit rattled, by the way, with questions concerning the Mandelson affair. But he was on the attack over this Muslim prayer story.
And she asked me about the process and judgment on appointment. She appointed the Shadow Justice Secretary. He said last night that Muslims praying in public, including the Mayor of London, practising his faith, are not welcome. He described it as an act of domination, straight from the Islamist playbook. If we're in my team, it'd be gone. It's utterly appalling. She should denounce his comments and she should sack him.
He wants to talk about justice secretaries. His justice secretary is abolishing jury trials. Yeah. My shadow justice secretary is defending British values. I know who I would rather have sitting on the front bench next to me, and it's not him.
British values. Sorry, I always had those. Tolerance and acceptance of other people's faiths. And come here if you're Jewish, come here if you're Muslim, Sikh, whatever. Just come, please, welcome. We obviously have Christianity, which is the predominant culture, but have whatever faith you want. Prominent religion, I should say. So even after these comments are supported by Stephen Yaxley-Lennon, otherwise known as Tommy Robinson, a controversial and colourful character, you'd have thought the Conservatives would have some kind of dialogue to put out today as they launch their local party manifesto, i.e., well, while I wouldn't use those actual words, I can see what Mr. Timothy was saying, or I don't actually agree with those sentiments, but I can see that we have the right to express views. We didn't hear any of that just minutes ago from Conservative Party Chairman Kevin Hollenrake.
Well, I think Nick was right. I think that kind of exclusive event in a public location, which was a ticket-only event in a public place, is wrong. That's not to say that we don't support, of course, freedom of religion, and we engage all the time. We had an iftar event. It was an iftar event,
yes,
I think.
Yes,
and
was.
We had one in central office, a Conservative central office, only a week or two ago, which I attended, and many people of the Muslim faith do. And can I say, I have had messages about Nick and about some of my comments I made earlier on this particular matter from moderate Muslims who agree with the stance Nick has taken and the stance the party has taken on this matter.
They are not, they as in prayer in public, they are not welcome in our public places. Why not, Mr. Chairman?
That's not to say Muslims are not welcome in our
public places. No, prayer, acts of prayer, ritual prayer. I don't know whether you have, but have you ever attended a papal visit when they come to this country? There's always hold these. I've attended two. That's wrong, is it? When a Pope visits the United Kingdom, Catholics, in fact, I've attended when nuns were there, the nuns should not be allowed to pray to their Holy Father.
Well, those are not exclusive events. I'm not a Catholic, Nick. You may be. I'm not a Catholic. But I would be free to attend that. And that's something that's a public spectacle. You know, carol service in Trafalgar Square would be a performance. Sikhs dancing in Trafalgar Square would be a public performance. That's an inclusive event. We see this as being an exclusive event.
But how does it affect anyone's life? It's not like they took over the whole of Trafalgar Square. They had an area that was sectioned off so they could celebrate and pray. What I thought that would be part of living in multicultural United Kingdom. Well, clearly, I'm wrong in the views of the Conservative Party.
Well, yeah, we're entitled to our views, Nick. I would reverse the question. Why would you need to do an organised event like that, which is only a prayer event, it wasn't a performance, in a public space? That's the questions Nick is asking.
But what's
why
problem
would you need to
with
do
it?
That? But what's the problem with it? An exclusive event in a public place, those should be inclusive spaces. This wasn't a performance. This was people simply praying in that place, a sectioned off area, a ticket only event. No, I've got a problem with it, Nick.
Where's the tolerance gone, Kevin?
That's just wrong, Nick. We completely tolerate the Muslim faith. We support the Muslim faith. All moderate Muslims we should support in this country. We support freedom of religion, freedom of speech. This is freedom of speech acting in effect today.
Well, enough from me and indeed from the chairman. Ali Milani, National Chair of the Labour Muslim Network, joins me now. Good to have you on board, sir. Ali, your comments on what you've just heard. Morning.
Good morning. I'm always pleased to join you, Nick. I'm astounded. What Nick Timothy said was patently absurd. And his obsession, his rabid obsession with Muslims is nothing new. If anyone just scrolls through his Twitter account, you will see that he has a serious problem. And Muslims are pretty much living rent-free in his head. I imagine he wakes up every morning thinking about us and goes to sleep every night thinking about us. Let me just speak to what the Conservative Party chairman just said. I was at the event. In fact, Nick, you'll laugh at this. I fear I'm the one that took the video that was shared. Right?
So you're the cause of all of this, Ali.
Yeah, I'll hold my hands up as being the one who exposed the domination in Trafalgar Square.
Yes.
It was a ticket only. It was not an exclusive event. It was a ticket only event to manage crowd control. It's about the safety of the people that were there. I was there. There were plenty of Christians there, plenty of Jewish people there, plenty of people of no faiths, of all faiths.
Within the segregated area. So you could come and celebrate if you were Jewish, Christian, Buddhist, whatever you might be. Yep. Okay.
Absolutely. Right. It was not an exclusive event. The reason it was ticketed was because it was a safety issue in Trafalgar Square. And you don't want to just have loads of people that you know, ends up hurting someone. Mm. Now, the key thing here is, and Sadiq Khan has made this point, Trafalgar Square has hosted Easter celebrations, Diwali celebration, Vaisakhi celebrations, Hanukkah celebrations, and you're absolutely right. You want to talk about British values. Tolerance is a British value. Respect for each other is a British value. No one, in fact, over 2,000 people were at that event. The vast, vast, vast majority, I'd be surprised if you find anyone that contests this is a Christian country, right? We recognize that. There is no problem with that. We say, you know, I went to a Christian school, for example. But it's about tolerance for everyone else. And Ramadan, this was a non-political event that brought people of all faiths and none together to celebrate and mark an important month and moment for Muslims. So I think this is patently absurd. And Nick Timothy, what's the old saying? He's a few baskets short of a full picnic.
Ali Milani, National Chair at the Labour Muslim Network. I hope you enjoyed the event and the video that you've certainly has caused some waves. Ali, good speaking with you. Thank you. Let's get the view of Jake Wallace-Simons, columnist for the Daily Telegraph, author of Never Again, How the West Betrayed the Jews and Itself, and a leading news commentator. Jake, do you think the Conservative Party chairman's gone a little bit too far in his complete and staunch defence of his colleague? Morning.
Good morning. Well, look, I know Nick fairly well, and I'm pretty confident that he's not bigoted or, to use the common parlance, Islamophobic in the slightest. I think he was really trying to point out that there's a problem within the Muslim community that isn't the same in other communities, which is a problem of extremism. I mean, if you look at the stats in 2024...
He doesn't say that, though, Jake, does he? Mass ritual prayer in public places is an act of domination.
Sure, I accept that, but I think that we need to recognise that the Muslim Brotherhood has a strong presence in our Muslim communities. In those Muslim communities, 46% have some sympathy for Hamas. And that Muslim Brotherhood has used mass prayer in various different instances in Egypt during the Arab Spring, in Turkey, in Gaza, in Jordan, as a display of dominance. And so I think Nick was trying to point attention to the fact that there is a problem within Muslim communities, and I'm choosing my words very carefully, intentionally here, of extremism, and that's what he was trying to point out, I believe.
But none of this is, if you read, and I'm sure you have, read the text, Jake, I mean, you are giving some vindication or validation. He doesn't refer to any of that.
Yes, I mean, I'm going from conversations I've had with Nick face to face, and I know what his positions are. I know that he isn't against the Muslim religion or Muslim prayer in general, and neither am I, of course. You know, many Muslims, you know, put their lives on the line to protect Jews on October the 7th, for example, and have, you know, fought praising the IDF. Many put.
Well, let's move on. Lastly, Jake, what should happen? I mean, the Prime Minister's saying he should be sacked. Others are saying, well, there should be apology or clarification. Lastly, Jake, someone who knows the man here, what would your advice be? What should he do now?
Well, to be honest, I think that he mustn't let his point go, which is to highlight the problem of extremism in Britain. That is the problem that we're facing. That's going to lead to more terror attacks if it goes unaddressed. I also think that it would be good to clarify that he isn't against Muslims in general. That would be useful, but I wouldn't want to dilute the point of shining a spotlight on extremism, which is a real problem that we all face here.
Grateful for your time, Jake Wallace-Simons. Thank you, economist with the Daily Telegraph. You wrote Never Again, How the West Betrayed the Jews and Itself. Calls coming in on that, unsurprisingly, and we'll come to those right away. And if you have a SEND child or SEND child or children, problems with finding a nursery, we'll get into that as well. It is 9:16, LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
UK gas prices have soared over 20% after fresh strikes hit energy infrastructure in the Middle East. Health leaders say the number of cases of meningitis linked to an outbreak in Kent is likely to rise from its current number of 20. And the UK's rate of unemployment was unchanged at 5.2% in the 3 months to January. LBC weather. Sunny spells for much of the UK. Some cloud around for the northeast of England and large parts of Scotland. A high of 18 degrees. LBC Travel, I'm Dave Goff. The M3 northbound stays closed for recovery work after an accident earlier between Junction 3 for Lightwater and Junction 2 for the M25, so there are queues. In Uxbridge, there are long delays on the A40 going out of town. Two lanes are blocked because of an accident after the Swakeley's roundabout. On the North Circular, it's slow both ways to the Beckton roundabout. The roundabout is partly blocked because a bus has broken down. There are queues on the A3 northbound to the Wisley interchange for the M25. That's after a lorry broke down earlier. On the trains, Great Western Railway have delays of up to 15 minutes. It's between Paddington and Reading after some problems with the signals earlier, so that's also affecting the Heathrow Express and Elizabeth line at Paddington. And East Midlands Railway have delays and cancellations between St Pancras and Bedford.
This is LBC. Listen on the move with the LBC app. Wrong tool for the job? Don't make that mistake with your van. Get up to 30% off selected new Toyota vans and pickups with a warranty up to 10 years or 100,000 miles with every qualifying routine service. Visit your nearest Toyota centre or visit toyota.co.uk/van savings for more details. Savings on selected vans and pickups ordered by the 31st of March 2026. UK residents, see toyota.co.uk for full details. T's and C's apply.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973 LBC.
A message from TfL.
I saw him in the local news a few days after. His name's Rakesh. They had to put him into a coma just because I didn't look again at that turning. He had two kids. How did I not see his bike ahead of me? Well, I didn't look again. He didn't make it.
Drivers, take another look, not a life. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
People ask me, what's my good place? Down the park, having fun with Toby, my cockapoo. And knowing that my pension with PensionBee is managed by experienced money managers. So, not chasing the stick then, Toby? No?
At PensionBee, we believe that when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. Download the app or go to pensionbee.com and be pension confident when investing your capital is at risk.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973.
Into your calls on this. Mark says, as a Christian, I'm not allowed to silently pray in a public place by an abortion clinic. Well, you are. There is a restriction, a certain number of yards or meters, but you are allowed to. Same subject. What is this? Comes from Jonathan. What is this argument? So if I have a birthday party or a picnic in a public park, I have to invite the whole park? It does seem the... Well, let's get your voices on. Zaid in Barnet. Zaid, you're the first through. Good morning. What can you tell
Good morning.
Hello.
So I'm a Muslim. I love my religion. But Nick is the chap who's made the comment. He's actually... He's not wrong. He's maybe made his point a bit aggressively, but my guess is he's quite provoked or annoyed by the time he's made it, as it's probably something that has grated on him.
So what's he said that's right in your book, then, Zaid? Zaidi, my apologies.
As a Muslim, I think he's been provoked unnecessarily. It wasn't the eve of Eid. It wasn't the special night.
It was an itfa. I think today's the eve of Eid,
With Muslims, with all the attention that's coming on, and it's a lot of negative attention, and a lot of people, maybe not educated to understand enough, but they are upset about certain things, and there's a lot, you shouldn't have arranged the event. It was unnecessary.
You shouldn't?
No.
Why?
Simply because this is meant to be a time for Muslims to be at peace, speak to God. It's meant to be a month of blessings, a month of bringing calm.
If we have Hanukkah celebrations in Trafalgar Square, if we have Diwali celebrations, if people want to have a Ramadan celebration, I don't understand why that's a problem.
If it was Eid, then there's a point. People could actually, Nick would have something, and that might have made him back off, okay, it is Eid. That would have made sense. This was a normal night of the fasting month. You shouldn't be out in the public. It's meant to be a time we should be all in the mosques. And not just being there because the mayor's come in or making it. I don't know if it was a ticket-only event.
Yes, it was. And one of the people who attended it said that didn't mean it was a Muslim-only event. It was a ticket-only event for safety. They have to know how many people they're going to have in the area.
I just feel as a Muslim, Nick, we've got a lot of attention on us.
All right.
Just like the Prophet did in his day, and the way we're taught is back off and do something that makes it better, not to provoke it. You know it's going to wind somebody up, don't you?
Okay. Eid Mubarak for tomorrow. Zaid, thank you. Terry in Sheffield. Terry, your reaction to this. Good morning.
Good morning, sir. Thank you for allowing me to speak. I don't quite agree with what this chap's just said, actually, because first and foremost, it's just an event. It's nothing... it's been blown out of proportion. I don't believe, it should have the airtime it's been getting, because there's certain people out there who are racially motivated, mm-hmm. and I think they're just trying to blow things out of proportion to against majority of Muslims. And majority of Muslims in this country are peace-loving and, caring and law-abiding citizens. I'm speaking from, I can put it to you, from my experience. I can speak to you from my background because I've studied in Pakistan. I've got, command of the language as well, in fact.
Right.
And I know Muslims to be what they are, and not as they're being portrayed by the likes of Tommy Robinsons in this world.
Terry, I'm glad we got you on. Thank you. I've got to finish because so many people want to have their say, and I'll let you attend to that cough. Be well. Mohammed's in Camden. Mohammed, your reaction. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. I was really nervous before, but when I heard the brother Zaid, his comment makes me feel a little bit comfortable because he's right.
Yeah.
So I don't agree with the act of praying in public because it doesn't make any sense to us as Muslims. Yeah.
Okay, that's interesting. Go ahead. Tell me why, sir.
Because first of all, the prayer, especially in Ramadan, is something very, very valuable. That and especially we got mosques and we got big mosques to practice the prayer. Yeah. If you want to go and do events for iftar or Eid iftar, I understand that it's not a problem. Whatever you want to do, it's fine. But just to practice the prayer on the street, there is nothing on even the Islam, on the religion itself, that says you can even go and practice it, unless you have to. For example, if you're traveling, you don't have anywhere to pray, then you can. That's why I would love to hear some people like imams or people who are more educated than me in Islam to come online and explain that to Muslims. And if you don't mind, I want just add another thing. Now, the non-Muslim people, I really appreciate everyone. I've always been respected by everyone as a Muslim, yes?
Yes.
But now, as non-Muslim people, they will see it as diversity, as a freedom, act of freedom. But as Muslims, we're seeing it the unnecessary act to just go, and not anywhere. It's a Trafalgar Square, so you got a meaning.
Okay, I get exactly the point you say, and I respect you. You think it is not in keeping with your faith at this time when it should be more sort of quiet and sober reflection, as it were. Mohammed, thank you. Ruby in Lewisham. Ruby, your take on this. Hello.
Thank you so much, Nick. I've been listening to you for 22 years, first-time caller.
Bless you.
So,
oh, love
I'm so excited. I just had to call in because I literally had my stomach turning listening to this conversation. I'm a Christian. I'm born-again Christian.
Oh, yeah.
But it made me feel sick to my stomach to hear how Muslims are not allowed to celebrate or pray in public spaces because it makes somebody else feel uncomfortable. It just does not make sense to me. I'm Kenyan, and you might know this, Nick, or maybe other listeners. Mm-hmm. We have Christianity as our dominant faith in the country, but we also have a big mix of Muslims, of Hindus, and this conversation would not even exist in Kenya. So I just don't understand how England is calling itself multicultural, multi-accepting, and we're having a debate about Muslims praying.
Lovely to have your view as a born-again Christian. Ruby, thank you. Look after yourself down. Don't leave it another 22 years. Be sure to ring me again now you've broken that duck. First time, first class. Ruby, thank you. Let's just get some in coming to you. Kaz, you'll be the next caller. Simon says, the Conservative you've just interviewed, well done testing him on his ridiculous views. Why didn't he tell the truth? The Tories are trying to court the Islamophobic vote that the Reform normally get. And he's a coward, in my view, for hiding behind this pathetic line. This comes in from Kaz. I see this as domination. We are a Christian country. This should not be allowed. Well, if we're Christian, certainly not as Christian as Ruby, but I thought the faith was based on tolerance and love, love of your fellow man, fellow woman, fellow human being. So if you want to pray to a different God, I thought that's what our faith was all about. Lorraine says, as a Catholic, I grew up with public processions in May to celebrate the Virgin Mary. They still happen in our town. The Orange Parades are a demonstration of Protestantism, which still happen in our town. Are these now to be banned? Kaz in Marlow. Kaz, your take on this? You're on the radio. Good morning.
Hi, Nick. Thank you for having me on the show.
Not
so casual
view.
Slightly nervous, Nick, but let's carry on. Nick, I totally disagree with Zaid and the chap that you had before, and especially
Mohammed,
Nick.
Was the other Muslim fellow, if that's who you mean.
Yes, yeah. That's it. And also the chap from The Telegraph as well.
Jake.
Jake, yes, I'm a Muslim myself. The sense of unity in an open environment with having people of other faiths present, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. We are a society of tolerance. I'm born and bred in Britain, and I've never had issues with racism, issues, etc. We've always unified in different events, religious events, social events, etc. And I think this is just Jake from The Telegraph trying to justify comments that weren't even actually made by Nick himself.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. And actually talking about Muslim Brotherhood, whoever they are, for me, I don't give a monkeys. I mean, when I go to this an event such as this, I'm going there to socialize, to pray, not engage in anything like that. I think they're trying to plant a picture of actually all Muslims. I'm not saying this, but it's a kind of a picture of Muslims are just waiting to terrorize, or cause terrorist acts, etc. That's not the case.
Kaz, really grateful you got your view on. Please let me get one more in. Kaz, have a safe day. Oz in Windsor. Fairly brief, if you can, Oz. Do you see a problem with this mass act of domination? Good morning.
Oh, hi there, Nick. No, not at all. I mean, I'm Catholic and
yep.
I'm Italian as well by heritage.
Yep.
You know, in the St. Peter's Italian Church in Farringdon, they do a procession every June, going back to about 1883.
Right.
Roads are closed off, massive procession, lovely event. Don't have to be Catholic, don't have to be Italian. My wife's English.
Right.
She's been going for the last 12, 13 years we've been married. You know, it's as long as it's ticketed, it's been done within the realms of, you know, they've applied for their permits and everything.
Yes.
They're celebrating. I mean, we should be engaging in that. We should be happy for them, you know, and comforting to them. I mean, we as Catholics are allowed to do it and close off roads and have massive processions.
Absolutely.
Every year since 1883, you know, and what's the problem? I mean,
exactly the same as I've been fortunate enough to cover journalistically two papal visits, and you can go along, and as obviously as a journalist, will go along and just be in Richmond Park, John Paul II, and take part in the ceremony there. Oz, thank you. Best wishes to your wife. Enjoy the ceremony when it comes up later in the year. Coming up after news, we'll stay with us, but also into London, the hardest place in England to find nursery places with children with SEND, S-E-N-D. We'll look at that and ask you if you've experienced that problem for your child or your children. It's 9.30. Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, on LBC News Time. Dominic Ellis.
UK gas prices have risen sharply after fresh strikes hit energy infrastructure in the Middle East. In early trading, it was up by more than 25%. President Trump has warned Iran he will blow up its biggest gas field if Tehran continues to target Qatar's main plant. Health leaders say the number of cases of meningitis linked to an outbreak in Kent is likely to rise. So far, 20 suspected cases have been identified and 600 vaccines issued to students at the University of Kent. And the UK's rate of unemployment was unchanged at 5.2% in the 3 months to January. Official data released earlier shows that pay growth slowed to an annual rate of 3.8%. LBC weather, sunny spells for much of the UK, some cloud around for the northeast of England and large parts of England, of Scotland rather, a high of 18 degrees.
Hey smart speaker, play LBC.
Good morning, I'm Nick Ferrari. It's time to get to your calls.
First time caller, a little bit nervous.
Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for taking my call.
There is no question, ending the war is the quickest way to reduce the cost of living. That is my first priority.
Hear every side of the story.
I would not be surprised if they put troops on the ground.
Really, really sad what we've become as a country. Basically, example of how our country is just in decline.
Dharma is going to have to get involved, but in a very limited way, because I think we are quite exposed.
I'm at the petrol station, and it's just cost me nearly £100 to fill up half.
Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app. LBC. Leading Britain's conversation.
Whether your dreams are calling you outdoors to reconnect with nature or towards moments of pampering and relaxation to rejuvenate your soul, you can bank on Lloyds to help make it happen. We've been asking listeners what their aspirations are for the year ahead to help create the ultimate prize packages to inspire that first step. Enter now for your chance to win one of three incredible experiences thanks to Lloyds and the nation's aspirations. Choose the prize for you at lbc.co.uk.
You know what I love about Eurostar? The comfortable seats with lots of legroom. You know what I don't love? Playing hide and seek with my feet. Or playing footsies with my neighbour.
Ouch!
Sorry. Now that I'm on the Eurostar, the only game I'm playing is stretchy, stretchy leg leg. And I always win. That's the ticket.
Eurostar. Together we go further. Legroom varies by class of service.
At Pets in a Pickle, we know your furry friends get up to all kinds of mischief. Like when the dog scuffed that entire chocolate cake. Or the time the cat tested his 9 lives from the curtain rail. Again. That's why we're here when it matters most, with fuss-free pet insurance policies, including unlimited video call access with First Vet. For pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Back to unholy and unholy row over a prayer event in a moment, and I would suggest comments and actually a defence that disgraces the Conservative Party. All right, don't necessarily say, yes, my mate deserves to be fired, but say, well, wouldn't actually use language like that, but I see the point he's getting at. But none of that from the chairman, who might return to. Well, we will return to that. But I want to come to another area which I know affects so many of you. And although this focuses on London, there is a broader conversation, well, possibly about the whole of England, but I probably sense about the whole of the United Kingdom, for that matter. London is the hardest place in England to find nursery places for children with special educational needs and disabilities, SEND. So council data has just revealed 9% of electoral wards in inner London have sufficient provision for children with SEND in the early years. This is research and an annual survey done by the charity Coram Family and Child Care. Just to sort of break it down a little bit, the next hardest hit region is the North East. There's 33% of wards have enough places, so that tells you how many have not, followed by the East Midlands. They come in at 38%. So it is a national picture, but particularly in London. I've mentioned Coram Family and Childcare. Lydia Hodges heads the charity, and they put out the annual survey and joins me now. Lydia, can I call you Lydia, or do you prefer Mrs. Hodges or whatever it might be? Good morning.
Lydia is fine.
Lydia, tell me how you and your colleagues get the detail and get the data for this.
So we've been collecting this for 25 years. We go out to every local authority in Great Britain and ask them to give us detailed information on the number of children that they have sufficient childcare for. And as you've rightly said, this is a national picture. It is much harder for children with special educational needs and disabilities to get the childcare that they need, but particularly acute here in Inner London.
Tell me what Coram Family and Childcare was set up to do, Lydia.
Well, we focus on early years and childcare. We're a social policy research charity because the early years are so important in children's lives. It is the most crucial and vital time of their lives. Early education has the power to really change disadvantage, to turn it around, but also childcare has the power to make work more affordable for parents and to change the whole situation of a family.
What distinguishes a SEND nursery?
I think it's not specifically about the nursery being only for children with SEND. You know, there are great nurseries that look after children with additional needs alongside children who don't have additional needs. It doesn't have to be a specialist facility, and actually those are few and far between. And in early years, quite often those children won't have a diagnosis. Their needs won't be as clearly known as they might be in their school years. So it can just be in a nursery alongside other children, but it's about having the right staff with the right skills and knowledge and the right space and the right equipment.
If we broaden this out, if we had a representative of the government here, Lydia, he, she, they would talk about the expansion of funded childcare entitlements, sharply cutting costs for eligible working parents, saving them up to £8,000 a year. Would you concur or would you question some of their rationale?
It is definitely true that the expanded entitlements have brought costs down for eligible working families. I think where some of the nuance is in some of this is that word eligible working families. So this is not all children. And I think that's important to say for disadvantaged families or those who are on low incomes. They are not eligible for those 30 hours of funded childcare from the age of when their child is 9 months. They have to wait until their child is two at the earliest, and they only get 15 funded hours per week. So when you take that across the whole time, that means that those eligible children are getting three times as much early education as disadvantaged children by the time that they start school.
Lydia, you referenced the importance of nursery care, nursery education. Is there data that backs that up, that shows that children who have good nursery care go on to achieve better in primary, secondary, possibly all the way through their educational career, Lydia?
Yeah, they absolutely do. So there is a wealth of evidence that shows the difference that early education makes and the way that it closes that disadvantage gap. We know that disadvantage gap starts early, but that it persists throughout children's lives and affects them throughout their school lives. And I think, you know, my concern is that we'll be talking about this in a few years' time, and that disadvantage gap won't be better, it will be worse because of this unequal system that we have.
So all the research that you and your colleagues at Coram have done, what do you want local authorities, central government, what do you want, or indeed NHS Trust for that, what do you want them to hear?
Well, we have two important pieces of work happening, the government's reforms to the SEND system and a review of childcare in the summer. Those are both, I think, really important opportunities to fix some of the problems, to put the money, the support and the information where it's needed to get that help to children with SEND and other disadvantaged children to make sure that they're not missing out on that important boost to their outcomes and also their parents get the childcare that they need.
Grateful for your time. Lydia Hodges, thank you. Head of the charity Coram Family and Childcare. They have that annual survey. I won't go through all the areas again. London is particularly tough. East Midlands is tough. North East as well, if you've experienced that. And how important a SEND nursery or a nursery that can provide for your SEND child or children will take your calls on that. You're listening to LBC 939 news breaking at this time. And the number of cases of meningitis linked to that outbreak in Kent has risen to 27. So you may recall initially the UK Health Security Agency, and there is considerable focus on whether they move rapidly enough. If I've got time, I might share. In fact, why don't I? I think it is important that we share the timeline with you. And it's the Daily Telegraph that discovered that the UK HSA, the Health Security Agency, was initially informed of this thanks to the French Health Ministry on March the 12th. An exchange student studying in Kent has meningitis. March 13th, the UK agency alerted to a patient in hospital with meningitis. March 14th, the French officials notify the health security agency here about their estate, their exchange student. They give more details. I won't share her name with you. And a pupil then dies. That's March 14th. March 15th, a full-scale response is set up. Health officials contact Club Chemistry. You'll recall that was the club, effectively the ground zero, on Instagram. On March the 15th, the day after someone's died, 3 days after the first alert is sounded. March 16, plans are unveiled to open more drop-in clinics. March 17, the UKHSA confirms at least 4 cases. And yesterday, we, of course, as you know, we rose to 20. This morning's news, that is now at 27. Let's hope it is all being contained, of course. More in the news bulletin, I'm sure. Let's talk about these nurseries. Caroline's in Sussex. Caroline, tell me what happened or is happening for your child. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. So I've got a young man now, and he's 20.
Oh, right.
He did go to nursery. We were really fortunate. We were in an area that we had an amazing woman that fought for children with special needs. She had a big nursery. She had one part that was for non-SEN young people, and then another part, a little hall attached to it with a door that went through for SEN. She was probably the woman that started me off on my journey and showed me how to fight for everything that we need. She was an advocate for these young people. They were integrated into the main nursery by the end of their 2 years at nursery. And I strongly believe that that is the pathway that set my son off on the amazing journey he's had.
Without How old is that, he now?
He's 22.
Is he in work?
He's in a supported internship.
Okay, brilliant. What was it that he got from it that's put him on his way?
So, as well as his social skills, which I think is a massive, massive plus for young people with SEN, he grew confidence, he knew how to share, you know, small steps, but they're really, really important steps. And I do believe that without that, he wouldn't be in the place he is now.
Well, I was going to say, had he not benefited from that, how do you think he would have turned out? That was going to be my final question on this.
I think he would have lacked in confidence. I mean, he's a renowned young man within the area we work on for being so outgoing, so confident and a go-getter.
And that
for me, you know, all he wants is a job. We've always worked as parents. We've always worked. We've had 2 jobs in some cases, and he's seen that. And he's had that from an early age. He's had adults in his life that have absolutely said, you can do anything you want to do.
And do you want to mention the nursery, or is it no longer open, so there's not much point?
It's Leapfrog Nursery.
And it did really well by him.
Amazingly.
Give him my best regards and best wishes. Fantastic that he's in that internship. So important, those nurseries. Other of you might be trying to call about that, but it's the conversation we're having about that prayer event that we talked about, which in the eyes of a leading Conservative is an act of domination. As, where's your name? Ed in Farnham. I work in Soho. Hare Krishna are out every day singing and dancing up and down Oxford Street. Muslims are giving out free copies of the Quran in Leicester Square. Christians handing out Bible pamphlets in Covent Garden. How people can object to our diverse religions in the UK is absurd. As long as they aren't being offensive, let them celebrate and pray. For your information, I'm a Catholic and I am a Reform UK voter. Ed, thank you. Sarah's in Harrow on this. Sarah, your reaction. Good morning.
Hi, good morning, Nick. First time caller, so a little bit nervous.
Oh, please don't be. There's nothing to be nervous about. please go ahead. What's the point you want to make?
So, just a quick point. We always have an issue with people integrating in society where we say that Muslims fail to integrate, we fail to, get alongside with our community. This Ramadan tent project has been around since 2013, and it actually started with an act of integration. Some London students at SOAS University integrated and tried to integrate with students who were away from home and who were at university without anyone. So they wanted to strengthen community ties. From that, they started welcoming people who are vulnerable, the homeless, anyone in the community. And that's where this has stemmed from. Every year it's got bigger and bigger. And to call it an act of domination, it feels very divisive. And I think we live in a very divisive society.
Actually, in a way, you're brilliant, your point, because Sarah, those who say, oh, they only pray in mosques, you never see them praying, what are they actually going up to? How marvellous they do it in the middle of Trafalgar Square. And you can join in, well, you can't join in, but you can go and watch if you want to and get a ticket.
Yeah, and you know, it just opens the door to ask questions in a respectful, polite way. And, you know, a nice free meal. Who won't say no to a nice free meal?
Sarah, thank you. Really important. How clever of Sarah there. We say that Muslim folk don't integrate. Oh, they have their prayers in mosques. No, they don't. They do it in the middle of Trafalgar Square. You can go and watch if you want to. We'll return to that conversation. And also, intriguingly, after the news... That is Tattoo by Loreen. Of course, Sweden's winning Eurovision entry back in 2023. Applicable to the Queen. Camilla has a tattoo, but where? Well, it might raise a few eyebrows. 9:45, LBC News headlines, Dominic Ellis.
UK gas prices have risen sharply after fresh strikes hit energy infrastructure in the Middle East. Health officials say the number of meningitis cases in Kent has risen from 20 to 27. And ministers have announced what they've called the biggest expansion of electronic tagging in British history. LBC weather. Sunny spells for much of the UK, cloudy for the northeast of England and large parts of Scotland. A high of 18 degrees. LBC Travel, I'm Dave Goff. The M3 northbound stays closed for recovery work after an accident earlier between Junction 3 for Lightwater and Junction 2 for the M25, so there are queues. There are also queues on the M25 clockwise because of an accident that's now on the hard shoulder between Junction 3 for the M20 and Junction 4 for Orpington. In Uxbridge, there are long delays on the A40 going out of town after an accident earlier after the Swakeley's roundabout. On the North Circular, there are queues in both directions to the Beckton roundabout. That's after a bus broke down earlier. There were queues near Euston Station. Eversholt Street northbound is partly blocked at Oakley Square. That's because a bus has broken down. And East Midlands Railway have delays of up to 20 minutes and also some cancellations between St Pancras and Bedford. It's after there were some problems with the signals earlier.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, James O'Brien.
He's already got a constituency, but Nick Timothy is bidding to become the MP for racist Twitter. And Sadiq Khan thinks Labour should campaign on rejoining the EU.
James O'Brien at 10. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Did you know that Tesco does home insurance and you can get club card prices on the house? What? You didn't know? Shut the front door. Over 500,000 people already have Tesco home insurance, and it was awarded which recommended provider for home insurance in September 2025. See how much you can save with your club card. Search online for Tesco Home Insurance. Every little helps.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. This is LBC.
A Southern train is a place where you can just switch off. Where you have the chance to scroll your feeds as you roll past fields. Or simply relax with a podcast, playlist or power nap. Go with your flow and save with advanced tickets at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
If you were missold a home on a holiday park, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive compensation. Text ADVICE to 78900.
Irrational is a printer that's next to your laptop, but somehow offline. Smart is a printer with self-healing Wi-Fi that helps keep you connected. Stressful is your printer choosing check-in day to check out of ink. Smart is an HP Smart Tank with 3 years of cartridge-free ink. Oh, that's smart. So go on, search HP Smart Tank. Find the last printer you'll ever need.
Hi, I'm looking for a pair of jeans.
Right. Low slung, slouchy, wide leg, bower leg, curved leg, flared, straight or skinny.
Blue?
Fashion. It's hard to keep on top of. Other things, like the upcoming changes to renting, are a bit easier. As a landlord, you will need to get on top of these important changes. They will affect how you manage your tenancies. Act now. Read the guidance at gov.uk/renting-is-changing.
With an Amex business card, Selena's earning points renovating her skin clinic and refreshing the builders.
14 coffees and 28 sugars, please.
And on new adjustable chairs for every room. And she can use the points to lie back and relax.
Don't put ice cream on your brother's head.
Well, Sometimes. And that's because with an Amex business card, your points can go towards holidays and more.
Search Amex business card. Interest fees and terms apply. Available to UK limited companies and limited liability partnerships. Signatories must be a director or member of the business. Subject to approval.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
No, the Queen's tattoo is not there, and I certainly wouldn't be talking about it if it is. It raises eyebrows for other matters. It is a sort of eyebrow. So if you do that, what's the actual term? Is it called microblading? I think it is. We learned today that that's what Queen Camilla has and has had now for some months. So if you have microblading, a cosmetic treatment to eyebrows, do let us know about that. We'll be speaking to someone who can provide that in just a moment. But let's move to the end of our conversation concerning this outrage that a Conservative frontbencher has caused. I sense some of my colleagues will be carrying on with this. Maria is in Enfield. What do you want to say to this, Maria? Good morning. You're on the radio.
Good morning. I just wanted to say that I'm kind of really taken back by the everyone phoning up. You know, come on. I'm a Christian Orthodox and I go to church.
Yes.
Easter, there's a big hoo-ha. We go out on the street with flowers and candles.
Lovely.
We walk around the street.
Brilliant.
Nobody don't say a word to us.
No.
So what is the big deal? Are we not one?
When you see or when you saw that video, do you see it as an act of domination?
No. It should just be, you know, live and let live. That's it.
They are not welcome in our public places and shared institutions, lastly, says the senior Conservative.
I heard him. He made my stomach turn. Because when you go abroad, you know, it's all different faiths, it's all different nationalities, it's all different religions. So then if that's how you feel, stay in England.
Maria, thank you. Irfan in Ealing. Irfan, what do you want to tell me? Good morning.
Hi there. You know what? It's my, like, I've been listening to your show for a long time, and this is the one topic that's actually made me want to call right now.
Well, I'm glad you called me. I hope you're not too angry. Are you angry about it?
No, it's just a bit disappointed. I'm someone that's born in London and grown up in London my whole life, right?
Mm.
And like, you think, like, the diversity, you'd acknowledge that, oh, London's a multicultural city, and you'd acknowledge that. But I feel like people don't understand that. That's the whole point that what makes London so great.
Yeah.
You need to understand that it's got all the faiths, and when you want to go on holiday, you'll be going to the Middle East and the Muslim countries, and then you're going to go, and you're going to come back, and then come back with your views as well. Like, it makes no sense. And I'll be honest, it's a bit hypocritical. I'll be so real. And that's the whole point of London. It's meant to be, and the whole point of the UK, it's a tolerant, diverse country. That's what we're meant to be. And it's disappointing. That's the reason why you're getting a lot of callers right now. Cause
we are. Irfan, and you're making the points that everybody does. Irfan, thank you. Great to hear you for a first time. Be sure to call me again soon. This comes in from Sophia in London. Would Muslim countries allow us Christians to do such public prayers in their country? No. We shouldn't either in the UK. We are a Christian country. I'm a Catholic. I believe in respecting others, not to discriminate, but there is a line. Sophia, I think whether deliberately or not, you've actually put your finger on why it is so important that we allow that, because that distinguishes, and I will say this, above those countries, because we should not have any fear to allow people to have a Hanukkah celebration, to have a Ramadan celebration, to have an Iftar, I should say, celebrate. We should not be worried about that, and that's what distinguishes the UK from being able to allow that to take place. Haroon in Staines. Haroon, your view. Good morning.
Good morning. First time calling, Nick. I would like to put so many ignorant people to their place today.
Go on.
So the first thing is, this is not the first project. So this whole month, Ramadan Tent Project did it in Silverstone, Tottenham Hotspur, Wimbledon.
Oh, right.
So I attended one of those. I was supposed to attend the Trafalgar one, but I couldn't make it. I think the first problem is, I think Muslims are being scapegoated. I think they have a problem with the Muslim mayor. Because all the other events, Sadiq Khan was not there. He was there on this event, so they have to make this, like, you know, propaganda, whatever. The second point is, you know...
Could we make this your last point? Because so many others to get to. But your second point, Haroon, so, go ahead. Yep.
Yeah, the... what's it called? The prayer timing, the prayers we do. So we break the fast at sunset.
Yes.
And we only have 10 minutes from the sunset to getting dark to do the prayer. That's a compulsory prayer.
Yes.
So all those Muslims calling and saying you shouldn't be doing, we have to. We do in mosques, we do at home. There's just that 10 minutes. We do five times.
I think the point they were making is that you shouldn't necessarily... They believe it should be slightly more discreet and it should take place in a mosque and it shouldn't necessarily be such a public... It's what they're saying. I don't think it was the timing. It was more the location. Haroon, thanks for getting your points across. Let's finish on another matter, an intriguing one. Never mind the King's speech. We're going to talk about the Queen's eyebrows as a Belgravia beautician reveals that she's been giving Queen Camilla a cosmetic treatment to her eyebrows. This particular person is Suzanne Martin. She's based at the Lanesborough Club and Spa in Hyde Park Court. Oh, that'll be the Lanesborough Hotel, won't it? Posted a photograph of Camilla on her Instagram page with perfectly arched and preened eyebrows with the text, "Our beloved Queen Camilla, always a pleasure. Thank you for trusting me." So what exactly is the treatment? Leanne Wilson owns the Lily Rose Beauty Clinic, which offers permanent makeup treatments, including microblading. If I got that right, is that what this is called? Good morning to you, Leanne.
Good morning. Yes, that's absolutely right.
What do you do? How do you do it? How expensive is it? And does it hurt?
So it's microblading and you're implanting pigment, which is colour, into the skin. So it's a form of tattooing and it's a really wonderful way to mimic hair strokes. And it makes women feel much nicer about themselves because they've had that improvement and it can create very natural results. It costs anywhere between, so for eyebrows with myself, it's £350.
£350, did you say? I'm sorry, clipped.
That's right,
£350. Yeah, go on,
and
yeah.
It lasts anywhere between 12 to 18 months.
Okay, how long does it take?
It takes 1 hour to complete the treatment.
Have you done it to yourself, if you don't mind my saying?
Yes, I've done eyebrows myself and also tattooed eyeliner onto my eyelids.
How much does it... It's going to hurt a bit, surely. How much does it hurt?
So numbing cream can be used, and it can feel uncomfortable towards the end, but at the start, you can just feel it touching the skin. But a lot of clients fall asleep during the treatment.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's quite a relaxing. They're laying down, they're enjoying it. They're looking forward to the results because it is an important treatment, particularly for those with alopecia or post-chemotherapy clients.
Oh, golly. Now, it's common knowledge, it's public knowledge that Queen Camilla is 78. You reach your mid and late 70s or whatever, do your eyebrows start to thin out? And is it more prevalent for women than men? How would you describe all of that?
I would say my client base is certainly over 45.
Yes.
Clients who are perimenopause, menopause, it impacts them a lot. You start to lose their eyebrow hair, it thins, medication. Thyroid clients and diabetic clients as well can suffer from hair loss. So it's a wide range of people that it can affect.
Okay. And lastly, they just fade over time then, do you? Is that what happens effectively?
Correct. The pigment is designed to fade. It's classed as semi-permanent, but it is designed to fade over time.
Grateful for your time. Leanne Wilson, you own the Lily Rose Beauty Clinic. Where are you? You're in Great Easton, is it?
I'm in Dunmo Great Easton in Essex, that's right.
Dunmo Great Easton, the Lily Rose Beauty Clinic. Leanne Wilson, thank you. There you are. You can get that for £350. Jerry in Hampshire has texted in, "I have my microblading all the time. It makes me even more desirable to men." There you go, Jerry. Good luck to you. Helen's in Brighton. Let's finish on a positive note. When did you have your microblading and why? Good morning, Helen.
Hello, Nick. Well, my favourite. I just wanted to start by saying that.
Thank you, my love.
I'm 60 this year and I decided to have that done.
Yes.
My daughter treated me. I had to have numbing cream, copious amounts. Because they break the layer of the first layer of the skin.
Right.
And it took my lady 3 hours each eyebrow.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
So, I've had a relationship not last that long.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
But it did hurt. And you know when they say, don't move, nothing makes me want to move more than...
Will you have it done again?
You have to have touch-ups. So I've had a touch-up and it now looks better than it...
Helen, I must end it there. I'm sure it looks fantastic. Thank you for your kind words. You're the last caller. Then I'm done. If you missed any of today's show, listen back on the free Global Player app or the LBC app, where you can stay up to date with all the latest news, videos and opinions. Download the LBC app for free from your app store now. James O'Brien's waiting the other side of the news on LBC, and I'll be back with you tomorrow morning for Arm 7. Meantime, stay safe.
Thank you, Nick. The time is approaching 10 o'clock, and I want to stress that what I'm about to say is not the basis for the first phone-in of today. But I wonder whether you have a favourite priest hole. I do. I have a favourite priest hole. It's in Harvington Hall in Worcestershire, and bizarrely, the excellent chap who helps run the place was on Facebook last night exploring said priest hole. More on that later. But I grew up very much as a Catholic, And with that on my doorstep, it was linked to the school that I went to. And the priest holes exist because Catholics would be killed in the reign of Queen Elizabeth I. And the idea that you were not allowed to pray has always fascinated me. And up comes Nick Timothy.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, Qatar says its main natural gas complex has been hit again by Iranian missiles despite warnings from President Trump. In a social media post, he said that the US will massively blow up Tehran's side of the gas field if it didn't stop. UK gas prices have soared over 20% this morning after fresh strikes hit energy infrastructure in the Middle East. City AM's editor-in-chief, Christian May, has been following market developments for LBC.
It is alarming, to say the least. We are getting into the touching point now where the real consequences, if you like, for the consumer economy in particular can be felt. There's now even conversations about whether long-haul flights will be cancelled, pressures on fuel supply. It's a very, very shaky start to a Thursday morning.
Six new meningitis cases have been confirmed in Kent, bringing the total number to 27. Two people have died since the outbreak began on Friday. The meningitis B jab is being offered to 5,000 University of Kent students as part of a targeted vaccine programme. Speaking to LBC this morning, Government Minister Sir Chris Bryant dismissed suggestions of a UK vaccine shortage.
I'm assured that they are resilient and we have enough. I think most of what we've been talking about is antibiotics, actually, because 2,500 doses of antibiotics have been given out, and, yes, and the bacterial meningitis responds well to antibiotics. Of course, the key thing is to spot it early.
The Bank of England will announce its latest decision on interest rates later. Previous expectations of a cut have diminished because of the sharp rise in energy prices due to the Iran war. The bank's Monetary Policy Committee is likely to keep the benchmark rate at 3.75%. Ministers have announced what they've called the biggest expansion of electronic tagging in British history. It'll see more domestic abusers, burglars and prolific offenders fitted with GPS and alcohol tags. The plans are intended to ease pressure on the probation system. And the government has announced plans to protect Britain's steel industry. It includes a new target to ensure half of the steel used in the UK is made domestically. The current target is 30%. In the city, the FTSE 100 was trading down a short time ago, 187 points at 10,117. The pound buys $1.32 and €1.15. LBC weather, sunny spells for much of the UK through today. Some cloud for the northeast of England and large parts of Scotland, a high of 18 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
How about Specsave ears?
Not sure.
Do you get it? Specsave ears?
Yeah, but no.
Oh, okay. Specs, and we also do hearing two savers.
Think about it. Should have gone to Specs and we also do hearing two savers. Can't see it catching on.
Okay, so we're saying Specsavers do eyes and ears. Senses savers.
Technically true.
Yeah.
But actually terrible.
Oh.
At Specsavers, we're hearing experts too, and have been for over 20 years.
Oh, should we just stick to Specsavers then?
Yeah.
Book a free hearing check today.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It is 3 minutes after 10 and you're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. There's every possibility that you haven't heard of Nick Timothy before yesterday, in which case, goodness me, do I envy you. But you were certainly aware of some of his greatest hits. He's the fellow that told Theresa May to call a general election that she very nearly lost to Jeremy Corbyn, and saw the majority with which she was governing decimated by the idiocy of the decision to call that election. He was also a key part of that election campaign. I think he was responsible for the go home vans that were one of the hallmarks of Theresa May's time at the Home Office. He is, I think the technical term is, a bigoted idiot. But of course we live in an age where we live in the age of the bigoted idiot. Bigoted idiots can become prime ministers. At least two of the last four prime ministers were bigoted idiots. Although, I mean, Boris Johnson's idiocy a little more nuanced and layered perhaps than Liz Truss's. But the idea that bigoted idiots had no place on the front line of British politics was under enormous strain last year and broke completely when Kemi Badenoch failed to fire Robert Jenrick for being a bigoted idiot about brown faces on the streets of Birmingham, making her probably the first Tory Prime Minister since... Would Harold Macmillan have sacked somebody for that? Because Ted Heath did. Ted Heath did sack Enoch Powell for being a bigoted idiot. And again, Powell's idiocy is a very intelligent man in many ways. His bigotry is not debatable, but his idiocy, like Boris Johnson's, is a little bit more nuanced than Nick Timothy's or Liz Truss's or indeed honest Bob Jenrick's. They are more idiot. Well, they are 52-48 in the case of a Powell or a Johnson. Perhaps the ratio is a little more complicated. But Ted Heath did. John Major definitely would have. The Margaret Thatcher would have done in a heartbeat. I remember the King of England, King Charles, sought much earlier in his life to be described as the defender of all faiths as opposed to the defender of the faith. And do you know, not for the first time, you find yourself thinking that King Charles, for all his myriad flaws and the ludicrous system that delivers him the title that he currently enjoys, he got quite a lot of stuff right quite early. He was a massive figure of mockery when I were a lad, for a couple of reasons. He was supposed to talk to plants, but if you look back upon, or if you consider now, the amount of attention that we're paying to mental health and the role that nature plays in improving our mental health, he was ahead of his time. And, of course, on environmental issues in general, he was ahead of his time. On architecture, he was probably ahead of his time. You probably don't remember how much mockery King Charles used to invite when he was a younger man. Look, he did some very stupid things. There was a telephone call between him and his then-mistress, Camilla Parker Bowles, that is, as the kids would say, ultimate cringe. But a lot of the things that he got ribbed for or criticised for or teased for have turned out to have been quite prescient. And I wonder how many people even remember him coming out and saying that he didn't want to be known as the defender of the faith anymore. He wanted to be known as the defender of all faiths when he succeeded his mother and became king. My history's not great on this period, but I think that it was a title bestowed upon him by the Pope following the intercession of Thomas More in an ecumenical matter, that Henry VIII, because he was a bigoted idiot and, of course, a syphilitic psychopath. We're doing quite a lot of tongue twisters today. Try saying bigoted idiot and syphilitic psychopath 10 times very, very quickly. I don't know who will appear behind you in the mirror, but it won't be pretty. But I think that Henry VIII, by dint of being a bigoted idiot, wanted to hang on to the title. Remind you of anybody? There's at least a long read for the Financial Times to be written comparing Henry VIII to Donald Trump, isn't there? Well, maybe not. I think that he wanted to hang on to the title. It's kind of like the FIFA Peace Prize. The Pope gives you a big gong. The Pope gives you a big title. And lo and behold, you then decide that you want to secede entirely from the Catholic Church, but you want to hang on to the title. That's very Trumpian, right? But I think Henry VIII hung on to the title defender. Fid days. It's on coins. It's on coins, lads. It's on coins. That's how big a deal it is. And it means defender of the faith. And he decided a long time ago that he wanted to be the defender of all faiths. And I remember thinking at the time that should be obvious. Should be obvious. And of course it isn't. Because today the bigoted idiot Nick Timothy is facing calls for the sack, which can't happen because Kemi Badenoch doesn't have the strength to sack him. She demonstrated that with honest Bob Jenrick. Imagine if she'd had the guts to sack honest Bob Jenrick for being a bigoted idiot before he went waltzing to the home of bigoted idiots and joined Nigel Farage's Reform Party. Someone's done it on the Yorkshire Bylines website, the remarkable parallels between King Henry VIII and Donald Trump. Do you know what? That's what I call the Clive Bullification of ideas. Every time I was giving Henry Riley some fatherly advice earlier today. Henry will be with us at 11:45 with the latest round of Riley's Reform Roundup. I was giving him some fatherly advice.